Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. Okay, turn the pages. I try not to do that on the air. Oh, wait a minute, I got to move some stuff around here. Today's going to be really interesting. We actually have 2 free hours, and I can't remember the last time that's happened. And so it's weird. I either have too many regular reports or I have not enough. There's never anything equal or stable or normal about anything that goes on here. It's really quite amazing. And the schedule is always changing. Yesterday we started at 7, which we're going to do for a while. At 7 a.m. Central Time, just because I'm going to be holding up, waiting for one of my reporters to come back. She's got a book. It's Heather Strickland, Rebel Keto, has a book coming out. And listen, if you ever had a book come out, it takes time to do that because, I wrote a book, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction. And, of course, you never know. It's like radio, starting out on Blog Talk and doing your own radio show. You never really know what you're getting into until you do it. And of course, there's no reason not to do it, but it's just fascinating the things you find out. And so we had a thing with our book, Rainbow Publishers. Rainbow Books is the publisher that put it out. And there's just certain things I didn't know. there's something called galley print. So not only do you have to write the book, they have to print it, and then they have to send it to you. I don't know if it's done anymore this way. It's probably all done online. This is pre a lot of computers were just getting going. This is the early 90s. And so you have to print it up, and then they send you the galleys, and then you have to go over that and find the corrections, and then have to go back and, into their computers. I guess there were computers, and sort of recheck, retype, everything else. Back in the old days when they used printing press, it was a little tougher. They'd actually print an edition, then look for the mistakes. that's called a first printing. And then, of course, they hopefully correct it for next time. That's what makes first printings so valuable. And I got that from Pondstar, so their book expert, when I was watching, the first printing of a Charles Dickens book. Anyway, so that and the book expert is kind of cute, too, but she's very knowledgeable. Anyway, so point being that there's a lot to writing a book, which you folks should do. I mean, you should definitely try it. It's fun. It's an experience. And then with my book, I was writing it as the airspace was changing. GPS was just coming out, and I had written the book, and we'd done it for the old airspace names. And then, of course, the FAA and their brilliant wisdom and timing decided to change all the airspace from what used to be, various controlled names. I forgot what they are now. So I got to get back into this. Anyway, you had terminal control areas. Tower controlled areas, things, whatever it was, forgotten. And then they went to these letters, class A, B, C, D, and E airspace. Well, my book was written for the old airspace, but the new airspace came out. And so I had to go back to the entire book. I wrote 800 pages. I got a little carried away. Actually, it's 500 pages when it's printed in the book. But then I had to correct all the airspace all the way through the book. This is manually. I had an old Mac Classic computer. I mean, we were talking way back, right? All I did was word process, which is fine. That's all I needed. I was writing a book. And so I had to go back and change all that. So I'll check in with Heather and find out what she's doing with her book. But any little mistake, anything, you've got the publicity, you got the other stuff. And, of course, nowadays everything's online, as far as distribution and, book appearances and everything else that happens. So it's an interesting experience, but you should all try it. Put it on your bucket list. It's one of those things everybody should do is write a book. Now, normally at this time we have Brianna Cannon, who is our young reporter with the Government Inquiry Report, which I absolutely love because she asks the best questions, and it's really it's great to have her on. But I think she might be missing this morning because I haven't had her check in, and so we'll see if maybe last minute. As soon as I say that, there's an email. So let me find out what's going on. Okay. So she won't be with us this morning, which is fine. That happens. That's the nice thing about, when you do radio, the first thing you learn, always have backup material. So I have a bunch. Today, we only have one reporter scheduled now, and that's Josie Cossey with the Latino Report. And so, Josie, you get a lot of time to kind of chat with us. So this is one of those really good times to hop on the line, 215-383-3832, especially in the second and third hours. Because I really don't plan to do a monologue for 2 straight hours. That's boring. Well, I got other stuff I can play. I might even play an interview. One of the many that I have. In fact, that's not a bad idea. I didn't think about that. Let me see if I have one of my classic. I always leave a bunch of classic WEBY interviews that I haven't played. I think I didn't I play that one. I played the gum one with Taylor Smith. I got Megan Barth. I don't think I played that one. The Mark Meckler one, the Convention of States, I played that. I played Grover Norquist. Here's one I haven't played. Fija. Yeah, I think I'll play my Fija interview. That's a fully informed jury association. And so that's something that definitely people need to know about because you need to know as a juror, it is your duty to judge the laws, not just the facts, regardless of what the judge says, because the judge is basically the umpire, the referee. They, as far as I'm concerned, they can't give you instructions. Why would you give the jury the instructions? You know, that's like the employee giving the boss instructions, okay? Jurors are the boss. Jurors are the boss in the case. Jurors are supreme to the judge. First thing you need to learn, the jurors are supreme to the judge. Well, gee, Greg, how do you know that? As I channel Rush Limbaugh. Well, it's very simple. Because the judge represents the government, the jury represents the people. And if the people are supreme to the government, then the jury is supreme to the judge. That's, one would think that would be obvious, but apparently it's not. So that's kind of a good thing to go over. So I think I'll play my Fija. I'm going to write that down. This is what we call instant programming, which I tend to do a lot. So I'll give you the Fija interview at some point because I have a lot of different things to talk about. And I got a whole computer. I got probably 8 to 10 hours worth of articles to go over. But let's talk a little bit. I wrote a few things down before the show started, so let me kind of plow through some of those. In my questions not being asked department, you know, it's interesting. In all the reports of the southern border that's wide open, that's non-existent, and everybody keeps saying Biden administration. You can't say that. They're still under an ongoing investigation. There's still Trump electors out there. That's never been settled. They've never been brought before the Congress, which was supposed to happen January 6th. You know, you want to talk about an ongoing investigation, which we talked about in great detail yesterday. The greatest ongoing investigation is what the Trump, you know, whether there are Trump electors or Brandon electors. That's the ongoing investigation. So until that's settled, Brandon really can't do anything. So it'd be interesting. And here's another thing that the Geldings are missing an opportunity on, okay? The Geldings are the short form of the Gelding Old Party. That's what I call the GOP, which used to be known as the Grand Old Party, but not on this show. They're not grand anymore. They're, you know, it's like Make America Great Again. You know, make the Geldings grand again. I kind of like that. But yeah, they're the Gelding Old Party. And the Gelding Old Party, there's a few things that they're not doing. One of them is they're not, you know, talking about, and nobody's asking them either. The great question not being asked is, how are you going to send the illegals back? Okay. Everybody's talking about this, you know, how are you going to send them back? Okay. Well, I would like to know, you know, any Republican candidate come, this is why Republican candidates don't come on my show. Cause I ask the questions that no one else is thinking of. And the first question is, how are you going to send the illegals back? Now, I don't expect the government to send them back. I expect the government to create a situation so horrendous for them that they take themselves back. A, it's cheaper, and B, politically, the left can't do anything about it. Well, how can you do that? You know, they came here for a better life. Well, they're not going to find one. They're going to find a better life back home. We're going to make their life so miserable here. They're going to find a better life back home. I don't know. Put the illegals on a reservation. Or wouldn't that be interesting? You know, but send them back. I mean, use asset forfeiture, take all their stuff. You know, put citizenship on the driver's license. I mean, a really good citizenship test. Maybe have an ironclad citizen ID. I mean, if you have a state driver's license and a state ID, why can't you have a citizenship ID? You know, and it have to be separate. It wouldn't be like, I don't know how you do it, but like a federal state cooperative, you know, well, I don't know. We'll have to sort of brainstorm on this. But we need a verifiable citizenship ID. The best one's the passport, but you don't want to carry your passport around with you. So with your passport should come a passport card. In fact, I wouldn't mind, you know, everybody shouldn't have to apply for a passport because it does cost money. But there should be kind of, some kind of citizenship ID. Because then you have to get rid of all the birthright citizenship people. So it couldn't be issued to anybody who was born here to illegal parents. So we'd have to kind of structure that. But the getting back to my original point, the biggest ongoing investigation is Brandon. Okay? So if you can't comment during an ongoing investigation, why can't he exercise executive powers during an ongoing investigation? Yet another question not being asked. Okay? So, you know, this is where I'd love to be a national reporter, but by the time I got there, I'd have to retire. So there's no point in doing that. I'll just work with my show here. But there's a question. So all the reporters listening, all the folks out there, anybody who is concerned, tell your media people, you know, call up Gorka. Hey, Sebastian, dude, Dr. Gorka, how come you're not asking this question? You know, about the ongoing investigation. In fact, anybody that says Biden administration, ask him, why are you saying that? He's still under an ongoing investigation. The Trump electors are still out there. Now, I find it fascinating that both Tucker Carlson and Mark Levin have both brought up, after I talked about it on the show, the Trump electors. Now, I've been talking about them for 2 years. I've been talking about them since the election ended. Oh, you know what I need to do? I'm going to play the Tom McInerney. Now, General McInerney, he was on, actually, Dr. Peter Pry introduced us to him. I can say that now. I couldn't say that. You know, Peter's passed on now, much to my great regret and sadness. I really liked having Peter Pry on the show. We didn't always agree. In fact, you listen to some of our chats, we didn't agree at all. But he was always a fabulous guest, and he was a fabulous friend, and he really helped this show a lot in ways that I've never really talked about because that's Peter. He just didn't. He just did things for you, and he didn't expect the recognition. He didn't need the aren't I wonderful kind of thing. So I never had this. Anyway, I didn't purposely. You know, that was just kind of an understanding we had that I would not. You know, talk about all the things that he did for us. But now, of course, I can. But there's a lot of things, and some of them won't until they come true. But there's a lot of things that Peter Pry did for us. He introduced us to some amazing people. One of them was General McInerney, the one who predicted the election would be stolen and exactly how. So I need to – let me see. We've already had that interview. So what I don't know how I can replay – I'll post it because it's one thing to – or maybe I don't know how I can edit it. Like a separate broadcast, or I don't know how I can play another broadcast on my show. I'll ask Blog Talk about that. Let me see, Blog Talk. In other words, separate out individual interviews because that was so good. It was only an hour. I think it was an hour. Anyway, I can always post the show. The other show that I post recently and it's on our Action Radio Life and Health Coaching page. We do have an Action Radio Life and Health Coaching page. It's public, so you can all go to it. I post the original show that got us canceled here. Not in terms of Blog Talk. No, Blog Talk's great. That's not a problem. They're good. I got a couple things I'm hoping they'll add to the show, but we're working on that. The show that got us censored, the show March 2nd of 2020, where we broadcast that chloroquine kills COVID, where we said that this is a flu bug. It's not really a COVID bug. It's a flu bug. You know, and in fact, pneumonia is the biggest problem. More people are dying from pneumonia and flu. And it's ironic that John Cullen actually came later this year. And John Cullen on our Thursday World's Greatest Doctors panel, and he talked about exactly that. And he had the data. He had the data. Is it data or data? You say data, I say data. Let's call the whole thing off. Anyway, so he had the information. Okay. So, and he had all these stats and things that prove that what's really killing people is flu. It's not COVID. COVID's, you know, how can... In fact, I'm surprised no one else, you know, smarter people, didn't do the math. If something is 99.95% ineffective, in other words, it doesn't kill you. In fact, it doesn't even hurt you that badly. It's moderate symptoms. You know, how come something that's 99.95%, you know, innocuous kill a million people? Well, it can't because the numbers don't work out. Okay, so if I said, let me do a little calculator here. All right, so let's have some fun. Oh, there's the ad. We stop advertising on my calculator page. Jeez, I hate that. All right, so there's 330 million people. 330, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Okay, so 330 million people in the country. And let's multiply that by 99. Wait a minute, I should divide it by. Let me mess that up. Divided by. Is it 99.95% equals a really big number? I think I did it wrong. I think I have to multiply it by 0.99%. Okay, so let's go start. This is why I don't do math, right? Even on live radio. 330. So we're saying 330 million people, all right, times 0.9995 equals 329,000. So let's minus that plus 330 million equals 165,000 people. So, and it's actually, those odds are higher for kids and maybe a little worse for seniors. So at most, you know, according to the prediction of how severe this thing was, only 165,000 people, okay, if you take 99.95% of the population, which this is imminently survivable, so how could a million people die from something that could have only killed 165,000? All right. Well, let's factor in early treatments. Do this one better. Okay. So what are the early treatments? You know, ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, vitamin C, D3, zinc, azithromycin, the Zelenko protocol, everybody else's protocol, whatever else, steroids, you know, things that people are using. So 165,000 times they figure they could have saved 95% times 0.95. That would have been 100%. Well, minus that, and that's added to 165,000. And the only people that should have died was 8,250. Okay? So COVID, if people had early treatments, and if the survival rate of 99.95% was accurate, then only 8,000 people should have died of COVID. That's not a pandemic, folks. That's one-tenth of a flu season. You know, because the flu, and that's the other thing we found out too, is that one of my folks up in Philadelphia called in and was talking about how only 80% of flu had killed 80,000 people this year. Well, that's a lot of people for a flu bug. Was it 80,000? Yeah, it was 80,000. I'm thinking 800,000 or 8 million. I said, no, that's not right. So, but that's a lot of people for a flu bug. So 80,000 people were killed for a flu bug. And a whole lot less were killed for, you know, only, now we're saying 8,000. So actually flu is 10 times deadlier than COVID if you go by the numbers. Well, the reason I'm sort of doing this and kind of, you know, falling into this whole topic is the idea of fear. Fear is the biggest enemy. It's the fear of COVID is killing far more people than the COVID itself. And actually the flu and the pneumonia and other things is what's really killed people during the pandemic. But of course they didn't test for the flu because it wasn't on the PCR test because they don't do cultures anymore. If you listen to our Thursday doctors panel, you'd know all this stuff. So that's why you want to listen to our Thursday doctor panel. It is the single most popular show that we do. And this week I got a treat for you once I figure out if it's going to work out. All right, so let's talk about what I found. I found Substack's my new favorite place to go. I love Substack because Substack has the best articles. So let's take a look here. So this is from the Truth Patrol. This is written by Eli. I'm not sure who Eli is, but Eli wrote on September 15th, the most deadly epidemic of all, fear. And it's a Substack article called The Truth Patrol. So Eli says, fear is the belief that somewhere in the near future, you will experience more negative than positive, more pain than pleasure, or more loss than gain. It is an emotionally charged state that results in psychological changes. Your sympathetic nervous system, fight or flight mechanism, is engaged when you are in a fearful or anxious state. It produces neurotransmitters and hormones like cortisol, adrenaline, and here's a word I've never heard before, catecholamines? I mean, is that like catecholamines? I'm thinking like what's the other cat things? You know, catastrophe. You know, there's another. It reminds me of another medical term. Well, I think cola means I've heard before, but cat. Anyway, catecholamines. Whatever those are. He knows I don't. Okay. Anyway, so suppose you are in a situation where you see a rabid dog ready to attack your child. In that case, you need an active sympathetic system to take over. You can grab your child and run or get some makeshift weapon to stave off the attacking dog. Of course, you don't need this system active when you're trying to eat a meal or sleep. This is where the parasympathetic, this guy's obviously a doctor, parasympathetic system is meant to be in control. It's your calmer vegetative system. Okay, let's go through the ads. Unfortunately, fear has absorbed many since the advent of COVID-19. I thought about this too. Is it going to be, we should make doctors say COVID-19, 20, 21, 22, and possibly 23. Why don't we just call it that to put it in perspective? It's not COVID-19. It's COVID-19, 20, 21, 22, and possibly 2023. Because Dr. Fascist, the genocidal, psychopathic, narcissistic, avaricious, pathologically lying vaccine drug pusher, Dr. Fascist, said, oh, another variant coming out. Yeah, we got another variant coming out, possibly in the fall. So you won't be ready for it. Yeah. Thanks, Dr. Fascist. Anyway, so COVID-19, 20, 21, 22, and possibly 23, that people live with an underlying sympathetic dominance. This is what Eli is saying, okay? He says this is unhealthy and stressful and can lead to physical and emotional disorders. Despite no more mask mandates, of course they didn't work anyway, right? Despite no more mask mandates where I am, I still see many people walking around with masks, even outdoors. This is part of the mass psychosis, which has become a prominent feature since early 2020. We see more evidence of this when parents and others are upset that they can no longer get their children under 12 injected in the UK with the COVID jab. So this is obviously a British. So that's why he's using these particular words. It's British. Perhaps I should read it that way. Next subsection is titled Anger at Plans to Roll Back COVID Vaccines to Under 11s in England. So back to Britain, it says it doesn't help that you have politicians and the media stoking fears and hysteria. Those susceptible are primed to respond to any crisis and panic the panic merchants throw at them. For instance, recently they discovered some polio virus in Long Island wastewater. Panic stations. Okay. It says Hochul. There's the next headline. Hochul declares New York polio emergency after tests show virus in Long Island wastewater. Well, that's what's called wastewater. Okay, it's called wastewater because it's waste. Well, what is waste? Waste is poop. What is polio? Polio is an E. coli type bacteria that comes from poop. Okay, it's a fecal bacteria. So I'd be surprised if polio isn't in everybody's wastewater. But it's wastewater. You're not drinking it. At least I hope not. You know, it's poop water. It's supposed to be treated. And in the treating of it, they kill the E. coli, the polio, and all the other bugs. At least I hope so. Of course, then they give you, you know, too much chlorine and heavy metals and other things you shouldn't have. That's why you all need filters on your water. So they have the water that they're treating in the first place. In fact, wastewater should never be used for drinking anyway. Fresh water should, okay? We got plenty of fresh water. There's plenty of water out there. Wastewater should be used for, I don't know, what, irrigating fields? I mean, poop's a fertilizer at that point. Plants love it, you know? So the farmers spend, you know, millions of dollars to buy poop to put on fields, you know, where they could just as easily take wastewater and use that. It's already got the poop in it. What's, you know, what's the big deal, right? Okay, it's recycling, it's environmental, it's sustainable. I'm using all the right words here. Back to the article. Hochul declares New York polio emergency after tests show virus in Long Island wastewater. Here again, a politician stoking panic. This is the article, not me. Right? It's unconscionable. Was any polio virus detected last year or 5 years ago? Have they bothered telling people that there are more cases of polio today due to the live virus in the vaccines than in the naturally occurring virus? Of course they don't. It might upset the vaccine industry. Some of those cases resulted in childhood paralysis. We also have headlines like the one below from Nature, that's the magazine Nature, as to why there are polio outbreaks. And again, outdated polio vaccine causes new cases of disease. So as Judy Mikovits, Dr. Mikovits says all the time on the Thursday World's Greatest Doctors panel, which is why you should listen to it, that the vaccines are causing the disease. COVID is caused by the COVID shot. That's why everybody gets COVID after the COVID shot. You know, I was speculating that the Queen very potentially could have died of her third COVID shot, you know, because that's when her health seemed to decline precipitously, and she was dead 6 months later. And I think 5 months is the average. Well, I don't know if it was 6 months, but, you know, it's in the time frame of it fits the pattern of a COVID shot, especially with a booster. So those British doctors, you know, is anybody going to question them and say, why did you give the Queen the COVID shot, you know, knowing already that the track record sucks? And she was perfectly healthy beforehand. What are you thinking? She might get COVID. Well, the survival rate for COVID is a whole lot better than the, you know, the injury and death rate from the jab. So any doctor who's just using basic logic would think, well, let me say this, this potentially has some pretty great harm. COVID itself, not so bad. I'll just give her the jab. You know, well, we got, you know, and why did they give her the jab? Because they wanted to show the British people that it's a good thing to do. So they may have killed her trying to show it's a good thing to do. I don't know. I'm just speculating. But what do you think? 215-383-3832. We also have live chat. Now, we had a little incident. Actually, we had two incidents yesterday with some obscene phone callers, and that's not going to happen anymore. And so what I'm going to do with new callers is you have to check in at live chat. Now, I'm working on a screener. We will get one someday. But if I don't recognize your phone number, and I record all of them, so everybody that's ever called the show, I got your phone number, okay? Don't worry. It's going to be held in the strictest confidence. I do not give those out except through my producer, when I get a producer. But that's it. But anyway, so your phone numbers are in strict confidence, but I keep them. The reason I keep them is so that I know who's calling, and I know if you're a good caller or not. If you're on my banned list, I'm just going to hang up on you, so don't even bother trying. You know, and all it takes is one bad call, and I'm sick of it. And I had two yesterday, and it really disrupted our show. And so from now on, you ain't going to do that. No calls unless I know who you are. So if you're a first-time caller, you've got to sign in at live chat. You've got to tell me who you are. And just post your area code. I'll know the rest of the number. I don't want to reveal anything. Area code's pretty big area generally, and you know most people, your friends know where you are anyway. So do that. So if you want to call the show, if you're a first time caller, you got to call live chat. Otherwise, you're just not going to get on. I'm not going to bother with this anymore. As we get bigger and we get some major public figures on the show, obviously we're going to have a lot more phone calls, and at that point we'll have to have a screener. Doing that. But until then, I can pretty much do it now because, you know, like I say, I've got a lot of numbers. And most of the callers are regular callers, and I know who you are. And the reason for that is that most people listen to the podcast, they don't catch the live show, which is too bad because the live show is where the fun is. I mean, it really is. So please listen live. All right, back to our article here. Outdated polio vaccine causes new cases of disease. Well, isn't that interesting? Now, if it's outdated, why is it still being used? Let me just throw that out there. Right? Anyway, so it says, this is the article. So it says, Governor Hochul needs to get off her silly ways, that's putting it nicely, of making an emergency pronouncement because there was a virus detected in wastewater. The WHO, that is the World Health Organization, who also got in on the act when it declared a monkeypox emergency in July 2022. Why? Because there were 16,000 cases worldwide. That's nothing. 16,000 cases? How many deaths were there? We don't know, right? You now have a situation where many Americans fear monkeypox more than COVID. So where's monkeypox transmitted? Mostly between gay men. Can I say that? Well, I just did. That's the truth. Monkeypox is transmitted mostly between gay men. Does that sound familiar to anybody from previous viruses and diseases? Just a thought, okay? So guys, stop doing that. Protect yourself. Stop. When I say stop doing that, I mean stop spreading monkeypox. That's what I mean. You guys can do what you want. It's your business. All right. So back to the article. He says, this is even though monkeypox is not transmitted like COVID. It is not carried by aerosols in the air, but by body contact and is primarily related to sexual activity. That's a nice way of saying what I just said. I just said it more directly. It's gay men mostly who are transmitting monkeypox. Okay. So, but I guess they're not as blunt as I am in this article. Too bad. People should know. Information is a good thing. Back to the article. We can look at most infectious diseases since the early 20th century and see that the death rate declined dramatically before, let me underline that in italics and put in quotation marks, dramatically before the advent of vaccinations. Below is a chart of five illnesses with a significant mortality rate in the U.S. All were in steep decline before vaccines entered the picture. So the myth that vaccines cure disease or stop disease is pervasive. The truth is that you take, and I'm going to bring up the chart. In fact, I posted it on my Facebook page. You can find it anywhere. All you do is go to Substack. All right, you want to find this chart? It's really easy. You go to Substack. You look up the Truth Patrol. You look up the article, the most deadly epidemic of all. There's a little dash, and it says Constant Fear. And it's by Eli, and it was written September 19th, yesterday. Okay? Yeah, yesterday. Look at my calendar. I lose track of time. So that's it. So you want to find this chart? Go there. Okay? So it's easy to find. So let me pull it up here. I got a couple of these big charts here. I got that chart and I got that chart. Let's try my luck. Oh, I got the right one first. Okay, so let me move it over a little bit so I can see when Josie calls. Josie's going to call in here a little bit. There we go. All right. So it says United States mortality rates, and it has two charts. It's got deaths per 100,000 on the left side, and it's got years on the right. And it's got measles, scarlet fever, typhoid, whooping cough, diphtheria. That would be the DPS shot, the diphtheria pertussis, which is whooping cough. And I've got S is scarlet fever. So DPS, or no, DPT. DPT, diphtheria, pertussis, which is whooping cough, and T, typhoid. So there you go. That's what the DPT shot is. Then you got the MMR, measles, mumps, and rubella. Okay, I'm not sure what rubella is. But the chart has measles, scarlet fever, typhoid, whooping cough, and diphtheria. In the year 1900, there were 40, so that'd be 4 million deaths? Oh, deaths per 100,000. 40 deaths per 100,000 people. So that's a lot. So in 1900, there were 40 deaths per 100,000 people for, what's that? It's hard. Let me brighten this up a little bit. The color's a little hard to distinguish. So the blue one is diphtheria. So diphtheria killed 40 per 100,000 in 1900. Before the vaccine came out, it didn't kill anybody. It had gone to zero. All right. So diphtheria was like 25 per 100,000 in 1909. By 1933, it was down to 5 per 100,000. By 1951, it was like, 1 maybe per 100,000. Vaccine came out in 1964, and by then it wasn't a factor at all anyway. Okay, that's diphtheria. Let's take the next one here. What's the brown one? Typhoid. Typhoid killed 30 per 100,000 in 1900, and before the vaccine came out, the diphtheria vaccine was in 1920. I made a mistake. So yeah, so actually it was a decline after that, but it's on its way down anyway. All right, so the next one here is scarlet fever. That's red. Well, that was about 10 per 100,000 in 1900, and it was down to pretty much zero by 1951. They didn't say when that one was introduced. So we got the diphtheria was 1920. Whooping cough vaccine was in the late 1940s. And the measles vaccine was 1963. So the measles pretty much disappeared about 10 years before the measles vaccine came out. See, the whooping cough, that would be pertussis. Whooping cough was about 15 per 100,000 dead in 1900. And by 1951, it was pretty much gone. The vaccine came out in 19, looks like 50, 48, somewhere in there, when it was pretty much down to zero anyway. So anyway, the chart basically says that these things are gone. Or very low, extremely low, by the time the vaccine came out. So since they were already on the way down, the trend did not change when these vaccines came out. Can you say the vaccines had any effect, or were they just sort of capitalizing on a on an effect that was already in place. Polio, they don't have polio, but oh, hey, we got polio here from England. Polio is one of the interesting ones because polio was stopped by good sewage, clean water, and chlorine in the swimming pools. That's what killed polio. And it was pretty much gone by the time the immunizations began. So we have poliomyelitis, England and Wales. I guess that's the name for it, poliomyelitis. We'll just call it polio. So here we have the death rate in 1910 was where are your numbers, guys? They don't give me numbers. They don't give me a chart. So the death rate, it's hard to read. Anyway, the spikes, the really bad polio deaths were from 1945 through about 1952. Immunizations began in 56, it looks like, when polio was way on its way down, and it was pretty much gone by 65. That's in England. So the point being, the vaccines came way after. The spike had already dropped. So the highest years for polio were 1945 to 1952-53. And after that, it dropped. I mean, it went way up. It spiked during World War II and then went way down again. And then by the time they started immunizing, it was already on its way down, and it went down further. Now, did the polio vaccine help? I mean, it looks like it did on the chart, but I can't say for sure because I don't trust it anyway. Okay, so the point being that illnesses are generally gone before they bring in the vaccine, and there's a good reason for that, I think. The reason they do that is so the vaccine doesn't look bad. You know, so if we already have herd immunity and they're giving a vaccine, so it's not doing any good. We're hoping it's, in most cases, we think it's probably doing harm, but the point is you don't need it. Because if you're giving out immunizations for something that's already we already have the immunity to and we're getting more and more immunity, why would you bring it onto the market? Unless, of course, you want to make money. And, of course, there's a lot more profit in something in immunizing people for a disease that doesn't exist anymore. Think about it. It's a guaranteed market. Right, look, and then you can take credit for curing it. Say, look, yep, polio's gone. The vaccine did it. No, the vaccine didn't do it. It was sewage, better sewers, clean water, and chlorine swimming pools. That's what did it. Anyway, we got Josie on the line, so let's. I think I've rambled enough for this half hour, and let's get to the hold still computer Latino report.
She started off as a poor child in Nicaragua, living under communism, and now she is a prosperous small businesswoman with a great family, living the dream as an American citizen. Josie Cossi knows all about both worlds, communism and freedom. She knows where your dreams can come alive and where they can die very quickly. And so her report is as much from experience as knowledge, and her passion and crusade are very real. With connections all over Central and South America, Josie brings you the world south of the U.S. border from personal experience, living, not just reporting, what's happening. And now, the Latina Report with Josie Cossi.
Well, I've
been having
the first half hour. Buenos días. Dobre utra.
Buenos días. Dobre utra.
Konnichiwa, Josie-san.
Yes. Good morning. You're absolutely right, Greg, on those vaccines. They've been injuring our humans, I guess, around the world, but more in America, with all the vaccines are tampered with wickedness to give you bipolar, schizophrenia, autism, death, like a month after women have babies, they die from the vaccine, and they say the parents suffocated the baby. All kinds of disease the children are getting from the vaccines, according to Dr. Judy Mikovich. And my girl that is working for me right now, her nephew, 9 years old, I shared with you guys last week, Thursday, the little boy had the routine vaccines to go back to school. And a few days later, he woke up and he cannot walk from the vaccine. And this is a boy that was riding a bicycle, jumping, playing baseball. He's very active. And they're having a hard time now with this. And they took him to Sacred Heart, and Sacred Heart says, oh, I think it's because he had COVID a few months ago. Give me a break.
Oh, really? COVID causes paralysis? I don't think so.
They're lying.
Yeah.
They're lying.
But here's the thing. Parents have to make a choice. You know, we know that these shots are anywhere from injurious to fatal. And yet people are saying, well, we have to get the shots to go to school. Well, but no one's asking the question, why do you have to go to school in a government school? And the answer is you don't. You know, so we need to make it easier for parents to have to do homeschool and to be able to afford private schools with vouchers. But I wonder how folks are going to look back at this time, because, you know, we look at Nazi Germany and we say, how did they not know that Hitler was going to, you know, create a Holocaust? How could they not know? How did they let him? How did they vote for him? How did they put him in power?
Yeah.
Look what he did. You know, and then, of course, history is going to look back at us and they're going to say, how could they let their kids get vaccinated?
Fear.
How could they have, how could they do, how could they let COVID control them? How could they, and just talked about in the last half hour of this article, which I didn't quite make it through, fear. The biggest disease of, the biggest problem with COVID is the fear.
Yep.
The fear is killing people.
Exactly. What's up with that?
It's making them do stupid things. You know, so, but they're not asking the question. Go ahead.
But what can a single parent do? I mean, if the school doesn't want to touch your child, I mean, I just can't believe this is happening. If you're not vaccinated, you cannot go to school. What is the parent going to do if they don't have a husband? And who's going to take care of the child if you're full-time working? And that's the problem we're facing right now. So parents are vaccinated. And I truly believe, this is my opinion, of course, I truly believe that they're giving COVID vaccine. This is not just a little regular vaccine that they give this boy. This is not good. Mm-mm. And you know, Greg, you were talking about COVID-19. Why do they call it COVID-19? Do you know why?
Well, I know because it was first discovered in 2019. But I made the point that we should call it COVID.
No, I thought it was 2020.
No, it was actually 2019. It came out, I think the first case was October of 2019 is when it came out. That's why they call it COVID-19.
Because,
yeah, it was already here.
According to Judy, they tamper, Fauci tamper all the flu shots in 2019. That's why they're calling it 2019, because they knew a lot of people were going to be infected with the COVID. Because they put it in the flu shots.
Yeah, but that's the common name they give it. So for whatever reason, they do it.
Yeah.
And like I say, we should call it COVID 2019, 2020, 2021, 2022, and possibly 2023. I mean, that's the correct name because it just never goes away. Did you hear Dr. Fascist? You know, he was on the news last night. Oh, yeah, it looks like we're going to have another, possibly another variant coming in here. So, get ready for that. It's never going away.
They know exactly. Yeah.
It's never going away. Until we take it away from them. We have to take COVID away from them. Yeah. Anyway, back to you.
All right. Let me do my thing. I got two heroes now. All right, my hero is Ron DeSantis and Greg, which is your name, Greg Abbott from Texas.
Oh, I thought it was me for a minute. I thought I was your hero. Oh, I was so excited for a second
you
there.
Too.
Okay,
I'm going to make you a hero hopefully soon by Thursday. I hope.
Ooh.
Hopefully.
Wow, this is exciting.
I hope you're going to be worldwide recognized with RideYourLoves.com on the George Magazine, if they allow me to put it in. I did put it in my story. So
let's find out. Thank you. Wow, you're my hero now.
You haven't told me yet. So,
well, you're my hero. I'm going to give you a round of applause anyway. Hang on. Here we go.
Yeah, I did put RideYourLoves.com that helped me with my ID, fingerprint ID. So hopefully
that's
still
a viable bill. Yeah, that's still a good bill.
Yeah.
You know, it's still
these
bills don't go away.
It's coming out Thursday, okay, Greg?
Okay. Can't wait.
GeorgeOnline.com. Anyway, so my two heroes, all right, let me tell you. Laughing, I was just overwhelmed when I saw all the illegals at Martha's Vineyard in D.C. I was like, oh my God, this is awesome. I was laughing my butt off with my husband. I couldn't believe it. I said, yeah, we should have sent 10,000 of them.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, 50 is nothing. You know, did you hear what I've renamed? I've got a new name for Martha's Island. I call it Mighty Whitey Island.
I love it.
So, we need like the plane. tattoo.
And
prepare
and,
the accommodations
and
people, for the new residents of Mighty Whitey Island.
On the that's cool. People on the internet, they're quick making all these videos with the mariachis. With all their stars.
Yeah, we post that too. That's what's his name? Movie? Stiller. Who's the kid? What's his name?
I don't know.
Jerry Stiller's his dad. Ben Stiller. So Ben Stiller, he's got a scene of this mariachi band. I got on my Facebook page.
Oh man.
It's and they said, and now for Martha's Vineyard.
Oh yeah. And then there's a guy, I think he's from the Middle East.
Mm-hmm.
He is calling them out. This is illegal. He's complaining to these people like if he has rights. He said, they put me in Marta Vineyard. He don't even pronounce how to pronounce the name and all that.
That's Martha's Vineyard
so
for those of you south of the border. Martha's Vineyard.
Yes, yes. He's funny. And he said, these people are the racists because against us, they're sending us out and they have to call the National Guard, the army, you know.
So where are the videos from the army camp? I mean, that's the first thing we should do. Can you get in on the army base and take videos? And let's see if they're in cages.
I don't know, but but you know, we need to do that to the, 11 or 12 cities that they want all the illegals.
Uh-huh.
They love them. They want them in the United States, so we need to ship them all. I think they're going to continue shipping them, actually.
Shipping them?
And I feel
like FedEx
sorry.
Express. FedEx. We'll send your illegal
ship
FedEx.
Them ship them out.
Yep.
You know,
I've
got to
do a promo, though. Mighty Whitey Island.
Yes, do it.
Okay.
I feel sorry because I heard some of these people in Spanish. Where are they sending us? Where are they sending us? Just like I heard this woman asking, where are they sending us? And what they promised to them, that they were going to have great jobs. And these guys, they're like overwhelmed. They wanted to get on the bus as soon as possible.
So I heard that was
once
the,
they got,
I think I heard something about that.
What?
They said they weren't promised good jobs. There's like a conflicting story on that. Okay.
Mm-hmm. I heard it in Spanish, the interviews that they were doing.
Oh, they did say they were promised jobs?
They promised them awesome jobs, that they were going to make a lot of money. They're going to send them to a rich area. And they don't know, of course. And they were excited.
Well,
to
they were sent
the
to a rich area, and then they were sent away from a rich
area.
Yeah.
Yeah. And once they got there, they're being kicked out as soon as possible. They were panicking. Yeah, but those are the people that you're letting in. And the borders are wide open. Wide open, Greg. That's what the illegal was saying.
Yeah. But I don't have any sympathy for the illegals that were sent to Martha's Vineyard and ended up on an army base because you came to my country illegally. So you've already,
exactly.
You know, the fact that Ron DeSantis is using them as pawns in this battle against the illegal Brandon insurrection and the governors, you know, it doesn't matter to me because they shouldn't be here in the first place. You know, so I don't care.
Yeah.
I don't care about them.
But,
leave my country go ahead.
But a lot of these people were from Venezuela, and they're fleeing communists. And if they get shipped back, they're probably going to be dead. Like Castro's killing a lot of people being deported back. They're having straight flights from Miami or from Mexico directly to Cuba, and it's not good. Those people are dying.
Yeah, see, Venezuela... I would make an exception. In fact, I would treat Venezuelans like Cubans because they do come from a communist country. So I don't mind that. If they want to apply for Venezuelans, if they want to apply for refugee status, you know, and we can vet them and see that they're not criminals and they're decent people, you know, I can see doing that for Venezuelans.
Yeah.
I would not do that for many other countries simply because, you know, the old excuse to come in here for a better life doesn't hold.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I was telling my husband. Venezuela and Cuba, I will make an exception to giving political asylum, and we have for many, many years. But the Biden fraud, criminal, communist administration, they're deporting them back if they grab Cubans or Venezuelans. They don't want them here. And you know why, right? Because
They're going to get killed.
They don't agree with their policies here.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
That's why.
Here's something, too, that why doesn't Mexico, Guatemala, Honduras, you know, I'm sure these Venezuelans, I mean, they're probably, you know, fairly decent folks, I imagine, if they're genuine refugees, if they're getting away from communism, mm-hmm. and they were hardworking people, maybe middle-class people, things like that, had everything stolen by the government, I'm sure there are countries that could use their productivity. I mean, if they're doctors, lawyers, mm-hmm. you know, retailers, shopkeepers, decent folks that worked hard, then I'm sure there are other countries, you know, should be encouraged to take them. We can't take anybody else. We've got to get rid of at least, I would say, 30 million illegal aliens before we're in decent shape again here. So these people need to go to other places. Mm-hmm. So we need to build up these other countries.
Yeah.
And we, Bianca's on the line too. We need to make these places.
Come on,
we need to. I'm sorry. Quick point that freedom works. There's no reason that any country in the world can't have the prosperity we have here and that we used to have here simply by using freedom. And so El Salvador, if they become more free, they'll be, you know, be a better place for people to work, and people would gravitate to that. Mexico, same thing. But these countries don't do that. They'd rather have corrupt, you know, idiocracies of socialism to make a few people really rich. But if they just had a little human concern and realized that everybody can have a whole bunch of stuff simply through freedom, mm-hmm. we wouldn't have these problems, even our own country.
Yeah.
They'd rather concentrate the wealth in the elites and the globalists than create a situation where everybody can prosper through freedom and hard work, which is what we're trying to do here. Bianchi.
Bianchi, yeah. Good morning.
Good morning, Josie. And that's the point. Those that's seeking a better life is not a reason to be able to immigrate into a country.
Mm-hmm.
Your purpose should be to make that country better. Immigration is not a right, it's a privilege.
Yeah.
I always have been. Those that seek a refugee status should go to the adjacent country, mm-hmm. so where you can immediately get away from the tyranny that you are in, persecution that you are facing in your own country. But that's not the way it goes.
That would be Brazil, which is a big country and could easily absorb, you know, probably a couple of million Venezuelans.
Yeah. Well, a lot of them, they've been going to, they escaped to Colombia.
Uh-huh.
And from Colombia, they're going through the jungles to reach Panama, you know, Panama, the country. And
Panama, they listen to us now. Panama is now on our national map. Yeah,
they're going
so that's
to Nicaragua,
good.
And from Nicaragua, they're going to Mexico. So they're coming all the way across. But, you know, if these people really, truly want political asylum, they could be asking political asylum in the first country they enter.
That's what Bianchi just said. Yeah, Colombia or Brazil. What are the countries next to South America, next to Venezuela? You got a bunch of them. I think Ecuador, Colombia,
mm-hmm.
Peru,
Costa Rica,
and Brazil.
The next door neighbor.
So Colombia and Brazil, Venezuela touches Colombia and Brazil, right? There's like one or two other countries too. Ecuador? Maybe not Ecuador, but I know Colombia and Brazil touch Venezuela because I had it on my world map. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, Colombia, it's the closest that they're escaping to.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, Greg, there's a lot of illegals in Mexico right now. I was reading about it, waiting for their little kids to come back, and they're never going to come back because they were taken by this fraud.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them are waiting for the status because they already did the paperwork, and they're waiting for the political asylum. So they're not coming through. They're waiting, hoping that they get their paperwork. And they're still in Mexico in different areas of the border waiting for their paperwork to be processed. You know, they fill the paper, they did this, they did that. And they had a team of lawyers from America, communist Democrats, helping mm-hmm. them to put all the lies. Oh, I was persecuted. My brother was killed. One lady was saying, my brother was killed, and they're after me now. And it's all a lie, all of it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So how do we send them back?
Let's
ask the question of the day. How do we send them back?
Donald Trump will send them back. Trust me.
How?
They have a plan already.
How?
A lot of these people are in the system, food stamps, milk. They're giving them money. So he's going to round up all of these people. Yeah. Yeah, I can hardly wait.
Why would he round them up?
To send them back.
That's expensive.
So, yeah.
That's too expensive.
So,
see, remember, all right, so let's get an action radio.
You take the money out. you take the money out of the USAID that you give to the country.
That's one way. Where's another source of money?
Because, you know, this.
What's another source, guys? Come
working.
On, guys.
You
Come
make
on, guys.
Them, you make them buy their own ticket with the assets that they have.
That's it. That's the key.
Yeah.
So you always want to think of the, we always want to think of the no-cost solution. We don't want to burden the American taxpayer. So you make it impossible for illegal aliens to live here. You seize all their stuff. You use that money to send them out, or you just make their life so miserable that they leave on their own, and you make it as easy as possible for them to do so. You know, take their assets and say, they're going to lose their assets anyway. So you take their assets. You say, look, we'll give you part of your assets back and a ticket out of here. Bye.
Yeah. Well,
or
that
or a reservation. How about a reservation?
Yeah.
Put illegals on a reservation. Yeah. Ooh, wouldn't that be interesting?
Yeah.
And of course, you got the ITIN number. Go ahead.
The goal for Kamala Harris and Biden is to bring 100 million. That's his goal, okay?
How do you figure that? Where's that number come from? That's a big number.
That's what they've been saying for a while. 100 million illegals will come to America so they can vote. And they're training them very well in New York, many of them. They're sending them to the radical states.
If we have 100 million illegals, you know, who's to say those 100 million illegals won't elect an illegal alien to us? And all these folks that think they're in power now, they could lose it. The first thing a revolution does, you know, is it kills off the opposition. So if you have 100 million illegal aliens here, that's more than enough to take over this whole country. You know, unless we have a massive war, which I don't want, obviously. But I'm just saying that what do these idiots in office think this is going to happen when you have that many illegals? They're not going to be in power. They're going to be in a slave labor camp. The illegals are going to be in power. They're going to be in the White House.
Yep.
They're going to be in Congress. They're going to be everywhere because, hey, it's our country now. You gave it to us. Thank you.
The 87,000 that the criminal IRS are hiring, many, many of these people are people coming from other countries. And they're going to make 60 to 70,000. Yes, sir.
You mean the mercenaries? the IRS mercenaries?
Yeah.
I think we renamed. I can start a list of that. We've named several today. So IRS mercenaries. What else did I say? Mighty Whitey Island.
Mighty Whitey.
Mm-hmm. Bianca, you like that name?
Speedy Gonzalez. Yeah, Mighty Whitey. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, raised the hair on your neck.
So yeah, Mighty Whitey Island. The other big one is organic fuels. You know what organic fuels are, right?
What?
Oil, coal, natural gas, and uranium. Those are organic fuels. They come naturally from the earth.
Yeah.
Burning petroleum organic fuels restores the carbon dioxide to the carbon cycle, thus making life on earth possible.
Yeah,
so we come don't say fossil anymore. Yeah, so they're now organic fuels. I had another one, too. I forgot what it was. I'm going to write all these down. This is too much fun.
But I wanted to share, combined with this story about all the illegals being shipped to sanctuary cities, many of our families are suffering. I had a family that came to my store yesterday. It's a black family, very nice lady. I met her 3 weeks ago. She came in by scrub for her and her daughter. Her daughter was supposed to work at Sacred Heart, and she was supposed to work at West Florida, I believe. I'm not sure. I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
Bottom line, she didn't get the job or something happened, and her daughter, they told her, no, we were looking for a different position, all that. And apparently, I don't know 100% of the story, but apparently these people just took everything that they had from Georgia, and they came here 3 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
And they have spent all their money in hotels because they cannot find a place to live. They're not qualifying. And they were crying. I think the younger.
Why did they come
14
here?
And
did they come here without a job? But did they have didn't have the job already and they came here? I mean, we have internet. We have phones. We have ways to get yourself. You can do Zoom. You get hired before you come here. You know?
Yeah.
What state are you from?
From Georgia, and they're homeless. They're sleeping in the car.
Take them to Stacey Abrams' house.
Yeah, you're right. So they wanted to, I guess her mom died. It's a long story, all this stuff. But the thing is, they're sleeping in the cars for now 5 days. They run out of money. They cannot pay hotels anymore. I went to bed kind of messed up last night. I'm in my comfortable bed, and I don't know why people find themselves in these situations. It's like I told my husband, I'm not a bank. I cannot afford to help everybody. And I called my church, and they told me go here, go there. And the first thing that they tell you is call 211, which is a joke, to get help in the Catholic Charity. But, you know, put in all these illegals in beautiful hotels. You go to New York City. When I was there a couple of years ago, bringing my girlfriend out of there, the hotel that we were staying, and I shared with you before on the radio, they were getting a lot of these prisoners. And we were scared to even get out of the room because they were putting all these criminals in fancy hotels in New York City. And now this is what they're doing to illegals. They're putting them in. They're giving them a little apartment, housing. They're giving them trailers, whatever, you know, they want, they're giving them. And our American people are suffering. Like this lady and her two daughters, they're sleeping in the car.
Yeah, but,
that lady should be taken to Atlanta, Georgia, which is the black Mecca, and she should be able to do well.
Yeah, I don't know why. I guess they wanted to come here, so I don't know.
Yeah, but people have a certain responsibility. I mean, I didn't come here until I had a job here. You know, I wanted to get out of California for years, but I didn't. You know, first of all, I had a daughter to raise, and secondly, I wanted to make sure I had a place to go to. And that's how you're supposed to do it. So people have a certain responsibility for themselves. If they came here without a job, I went to California without a job, but I brought money with me and I was young, you know, so it was okay. It worked out fine. But the thing is, you know, I would do that in my 20s, but I wouldn't do that in my 60s. Well, I was 50s at the time. But the thing is, there's a certain responsibility that you have to exercise yourself. If you go to another place hoping for a job rather than having a job, that's on you, you know, and helping everybody, you know, there are ways to help people that don't cost you money. And the thing is, you have to understand that people have responsibility for themselves. You are not responsible for everybody. I mean, you want to be. Wouldn't be a great world.
I just felt bad.
See, you feel, but you feel grateful for the fact that you were rescued from Nicaragua, and which is a wonderful thing. But don't feel guilty about that. Don't feel that because you have the fortune that you have and you're able to come to this country and start a business and everything you have. That doesn't mean that you have to give everything away that you get to everybody for every reason. You know, you got a heart of gold and you're a wonderful person, but you don't want to be generous to the point where it hurts you. And I don't know if that's happening.
That is exhausting us, so.
Yeah, okay. It's okay to say no. It's okay to say fix it yourself.
I know. It's my husband is getting frustrated because a friend of ours, he's stranded in the middle of the road over there by Brent Lane, and my husband has to come and rescue him. Not only that, but he didn't have money with him, so he has to go buy a battery for him together with him, put the battery on, and then he said, can I borrow $200 so I can fix something else that it was wrong with the car? So, you know what I mean?
I do. Do they have a job? Does he have a job?
Yeah, he has a job. Yeah,
okay.
But the thing is, my husband had to drive over there, rescue him, but then he was stranded. And on top of that, he's paying for the battery that they went to buy it and put it on for him.
The thing is, there are other resources.
So he came to the store, borrowed $200. And then another friend of ours, she has a dead battery, so my husband had to go to the place, to her place. And
wait a minute. How about AAA? We'll charge your battery or get your car started. $50 a year. $50 a year. Buy him a AAA membership. When that goes through, then the truck will come out and give him a charge.
I'm helping.
You know, I mean, I think it's like $90 for the 100 mile tow, the plus. You get $50 a year. It's the best insurance policy in the world. AAA.
Mm-hmm.
You get AAA, you know, and you don't have to worry about dead batteries. Now, if you're an abusive member, if you don't fix your battery, that's on you. They won't give you service forever.
Yeah.
But the point is when you're, and I've used AAA, I've had beater cars my whole life. I've been poor, you know?
Yeah.
And so I've always had AAA because I'm not stupid, you know? I mean, help yourself.
We pay extra
people. Help yourself,
on
people.
My insurance. We pay extra if we have a problem. The tow truck comes and help us, you know, and take care of it.
But you got AAA,
you
don't need that.
Extra.
You got AAA,
yeah.
You don't need that.
Yeah.
They'll come too. You know, $100 bucks a year. $100 bucks a year, you get 100 miles worth of towing, so you can be traveling somewhere, and you don't have to go to the AAA station of choice, you know, of their choice. You go to your choice.
Yeah, we pay a lot less with USA. Insurance, you know.
But the point is that people need to help themselves, and we need to have the resources. So the best way to help people might be to say to those folks that are stranded with their dead batteries, what you really need is AAA. Here's $50. Get a AAA. We'll give you your first membership, as opposed to $200 for a new battery. Once they get their battery charged, they can go to their job and start earning the money, you know.
Now,
I appreciate your generosity. It's wonderful. But you don't, you know... When I look at helping people, there are ways to do it, I think. And this is the same thing. You know, what's the old saying? You know, you feed somebody for a day or feed them, give them a fish, you help
you
them for a day,
them
teach them how to fish, you know, then you help them for life. Well, I believe in the same thing. You know, and I started a new career, a lot of hard work, but I went to a community college at 56 years old. It was very cheap.
Good.
It was great. I learned radio production. I use that little, you know, Ohlone College, Fremont, California. Thank you again for being there, for having a college radio station, for letting me learn broadcast stuff, and letting me announce songs by Ariana Grande, someone I'd never heard of. I was a college DJ. I was a college. I literally was a college. And 21 Pilots. I was announcing all these bands and musicians. I had no idea who they were. Right? Seriously, this is a funny story because you had all these 18-year-old voices. You know, normal college things. And then it was my turn. Uh-huh. And now we have the latest from 21 Pilots on KOHL Ohlone College Radio. 98 or 89.5 or whatever it was. It was hysterical. But obviously my voice was different at 56 than your 18-year-old college student. But these opportunities are available. It costs next to nothing. They are there. Now look. Okay. Now I work harder than most people.
I think it's our fault, so do you. Spoiled people.
What's that now?
We have another guy, a British guy, and born in Spain. He's always having to borrow money. And my husband lends him money, and then
Does he pay it back?
I'll pay you in 2 weeks. And
I would gladly pay you Tuesday for a hamburger today. We grew up with that one.
Oh, wait. And the young man that he borrowed the money for the battery plus the $200 to do something else for his car. He says, I get paid Friday. I'll bring the money Friday. And by the time Friday came, he never showed up. And then he called Saturday. And he goes, hey, by the way, I decided to pay my insurance company, so I'll pay you in 2 weeks. And my husband was hot. He said, no, I need to get paid now. You told me Friday. It's not that I need the money, but the thing is you promised that you're going to bring the money when you got paid. And he made a decision to pay the insurance company instead of my husband. So
of course.
And borrow the money from his mom. So he showed up with the money.
Because he knows he has to pay the insurance. He knows he doesn't have to pay your husband. So this is an interesting topic, actually. I want to kind of explore this a little bit.
Crazy.
What is generosity? Okay. I mean, there's more to generosity than just giving money. It's like welfare. Are you helping people by keeping them on welfare? No, not generationally.
No.
You're not. Mm-hmm. So in many ways, money, you know, and people, they take money and then they expect more and then they ask for more. Oh, I'll happily pay you, you know, Wimpy on Popeye. We learned this at 5 years old. I would gladly pay you Tuesday for a hamburger today.
Yeah.
Did he ever pay Popeye back or Brutus back for a hamburger? No. So what was the lesson we learned?
Mm-hmm.
You know, begging works, you know, because people are generous and they feel guilty about asking for their money back. So it's better to give money. You want to give somebody some money. Yeah, just give it.
Hey. And you know, Greg, that's what's happening. Our government is disabling so many people to be on the street with drugs. Like my niece. My niece been in the street for, 15 years. 15, because she's like 38, I think. And the government gives her $900 cash, and in 2 hours it's gone on drugs. $300 EBT card. And I shared on the radio before, too. And she goes to a special place, and she gets $100 cash for her $300. So she loses $200 immediately. And all these
she doesn't care. She gets
$100
free.
All this money.
Yeah.
She gets all this money. So we're enabling all these people by giving and giving and giving. They don't deserve anything. They need to go to work, period.
Yeah.
If you don't work, you cannot eat. And I believe in that. Anyway.
Hmm.
So
let's talk about some of these other countries, because you know these places well. But like El Salvador, are they creating a better situation through more freedom? Is it improving there? Or Brazil is a great study. The current president, I don't know what's going on there, but when I saw him interviewed, I think Tucker Carlson was there. They're making huge strides. Mm-hmm. Freedom works. So where do we have places where freedom's working south of our border? What are some of the best countries that are doing well?
The one that I know is El Salvador.
Okay.
The president is doing a lot of stuff for the people and giving incentives so people won't leave. But the Biden criminals, and I think Bill Gates involved in George Soros and all this with the United Nations, they're giving them money to travel, and they're making it look so good that they're going to have everything in America for free. And, you know, when they hear, you don't have to work. You deserve it. Like a lot of our people here in America, you deserve it. The government should take care of you. And, you know, right?
Like my ancestors, like they say, my ancestors were slaves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, so are mine. I'm half Greek. So, you know, back in, ancient Greece, my ancestors were slaves. I don't think they were leading the society. Otherwise, I'd be a rich Greek person by now. But no. So, I could claim the same thing.
I truly believe right now we all are slaves. So this corrupt corporation, the United Nations, is in control of us, and England and the Pope. So we're all slaves still.
Well, I don't hold exactly what you're saying, but you're on have a really good article on exactly what you're talking about. Because we talked about company towns before, how if you live in a mine, mining company mm-hmm. town, you make money. You don't make money, you make scrip. In other words, they give you credits mm-hmm. at the local store. But the cost of the goods mm-hmm. at the store is greater than the amount of money they pay you in scrip. So you continually increase mm-hmm. your debt. Well, I've got an article I found that talks about the whole nation that way. I'll get into it in a little bit. I want to make sure we got extra time. We've got the whole rest of the show. I have 2 free hours,
which is unusual.
Oh, okay. Let's think about that for a bit, because you look at the whole – I've got 2 articles here. The first one I think I read before. And let me see if I get I got both of them here. Yeah, the company town. I should read that one, then I should get to the other one. Because maybe I'll finish my fear article first. Because these are 2 great articles. This will take some – we got some time. I still might do my
company town.
All right. Where's my company town article? I got that one. All right. Let me just see if there's anything else in my fear article that I want to cover. Let's move my notes around a little bit. This is improvised radio because I knew I was going to be improvising anyway. So let's all right. So then it talks about the tainted polio vaccine. Okay. We can look that up. You've got the basic idea. That's it for that article. So the biggest problem with the whole thing is fear. So let me play a couple of things and then I'll come back with 2 incredible articles. One on the company town and the other reason why our government is dying. And I find these both to be fascinating. So let me play you some things and I'll be right back. Do you know your way around healthcare, insurance, pharmacies, surgery, alternative treatments and choices? I don't. Which is why I'm so glad I met Priscilla Romans, had her on Action Radio, and learned about health patient advocacy. She is the founder of Great Care. And now as an affiliate of Great Care, we are proud to offer through our discount code, WYL, which stands for Write Your Laws, a 10% discount. Great Care saves you both time and money. They provide medical advocacy, consultation, advice, and recommendations nationwide. Their website is greatcare.com. That's GRAITHcare.com. You can email them at greatcare.adm@gmail.com or call them at 469-864-7149. That's 469-864-7149. Great Care, better health through better knowledge and advocacy. Greg Penglis here for my book, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction. Everyone at some point in their life wants to learn how to fly. Few try, even fewer go on to get a license. I believe a major reason for that is how we teach people how to fly. My book is designed to help you navigate the flight training system, but it's so much more than that.
It really describes an entirely new way to teach flying. So if you've never tried a lesson or got discouraged in your training and quit for any reason, this book can help you. Don't be a rote pilot who just follows procedures. Be a thinking pilot who makes great decisions, who understands all the reasons why we do what we do. You can incorporate these principles into your own flight training at any time. The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction is featured on the Action Radio with Greg Panglis Facebook page and is available from Amazon.com. From addiction to achievement, that is the story of Mike Lindell. It started with MyPillow and now goes to MyCoffee. Action Radio is proud to be an affiliate of MyPillow. Our discount code is the same for all our product affiliates, WYL, which stands for Write Your Laws. MyPillow pillows are guaranteed the most comfortable pillow you'll ever own. Action Radio is guaranteed to be the most controversial show you will ever hear. Check out their products with our discount code at mypillow.com/WYL. That's mypillow.com/WYL. Or order now by calling 1-800-544-8939. That's 1-800-544-8939. Sleep well, so you can wake up and hear Action Radio live. Action Radio, part of the ADHD Radio Network, the ultimate free speech zone. We the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed, and have the power through juries to nullify the laws by which we do not consent to be governed. At Action Radio, we don't report the news. We are the news! Every other show reports what has happened. We talk about what can happen. From the questions no one has thought to ask, to the answers no one has thought to consider, to the actions no one has dared to take. That is Action Radio.
Who, us? Let's bring back our regular panel here, Josie and Pianchi. And let's get into some interesting stuff. Again,
hey,
I don't have these
I
things.
Can I tell you quickly?
Yeah,
can
sure.
Can I tell you quickly, since you're advertising my pillow guy?
Uh-huh.
It is the best sheet I ever had in my life.
Ooh.
Sheet. And towels.
Yep.
I spent like $99 when they're on sale. Amazing. Oh my God. It's like I can hardly wait to get in the bed. And I'm serious. I'm not just making
it up.
Oh,
I believe you, yeah. Especially the end of a long day.
Uh-huh.
We've got we're affiliates, so if you next time you buy something from MyPillow, go to use the discount code WYL, write your laws, and that'll help us here. Now fortunately they sent me a couple of samples. Once you're an affiliate, you know, they sent me some of the towels. I'm like, oh, my God, those towels are great. So, yeah. And I'd already bought my slippers. And so I have I'm wearing my slippers right now. And I have my towels.
Oh, good.
You know, so yeah. So I love that stuff. So I'm hoping to get,
I got rid of all my sheets and I replaced them with my pillow. And towels, the same thing. I gave a bunch of towels away and I replaced. I love the towels. They're like... I don't know how to explain it, but a lot of the new towels, they stink, but this one do not, and they dry good. So, but
they might stink because of what they're washed in. If you go to a hotel, they're heavily bleached, you know, and they do all kinds of stuff like that to them. So they basically hot water and bleach. So here's your household Action Radio tip for the day: cold water, don't use a dryer. Use a non-bleach detergent. You know, wash yourself in cold water and let it dry naturally, and it'll stay fluffy for years. You know, so cotton is not meant to be baked. You don't boil your cotton in hot water, and you don't bake your cotton in a dryer. That's just basic, you know. This is a fiber. It's a natural fiber, folks.
Yeah.
Take care of it. Take care of your cotton. Your cotton will take care of you. Huh. How did I get onto that subject?
My fault.
No, it's good. This is, we cover everything here. Yeah. So you name it, we'll do it. All right. So I did a broadcast. Actually, it's Labor Day. I think this is part of our Labor Day special. So for those that don't know, we broadcast on holidays. Holidays are some of our best shows. Labor Day, we talked about labor history. We had Jonathan Mosley on with a bunch of court cases. We have July 4th, we all read the Declaration of Independence. Anybody that wants to join us of our reporters crew. Martin Luther King Day, obviously I read the I Have a Dream speech. One of the other holidays. Just trying to think. President's Day, we really don't celebrate too much. That's not really a holiday. It used to be Washington's birthday. But Memorial Day, we read the poetry of soldiers written in combat. Probably do something similar. I don't know what I'm going to do for Veterans Day this year. I don't know. I'll think of something. But the holidays are very special on here. The only times I think we don't broadcast are Thanksgiving and Christmas, and because nobody's listening anyway. And it's, those are holidays that I want to take off too. You know. Oh, speaking of which, the powwow, the Creek powwow is back. It's called Creek Fest. So we'll be announcing this more and more. We are broadcasting from the Creek Tribal Grounds, Santa Rosa Creek Tribal Grounds, from 6 in the morning till 9 in the morning on the Saturday before Thanksgiving. So, Josie, you want to come be on the show? Come on up to the Creek Grounds? Chumukla.
When is that?
It's the Saturday before Thanksgiving. So whatever the Thursday. Let me get my calendar out here now. So the Thursday.
Early in the morning?
Okay, fine. You don't have to be there, you know, when the show is on. It will call in then. Call in from wherever you are. See,
okay.
November. Remember the 5th of November. There we go. So Thanksgiving is Thursday, 1, 2, 3, 4, 24th. So that's Thanksgiving. So the Saturday before that is the 19th. So the 19th of November is the powwow, which they're calling the Creek Fest this year. It's been kind of stopped for 2 years because of COVID, because nobody was going to be there. And so now they got new guests. They've got all kinds of acts and things. I had a poster on my my page. But if you go to the Santa Rosa Creek Tribe, you will see the poster for the Creek Fest. And so I'm trying to get all of our local reporters out there early in the morning on Saturday. First of all, we should all meet each other. And we should do that anyway. We should have like a meeting. Because we've got about, what, 7 or 8 of us around here. You got the Wild Women of Wellness. We've got Chansey, Lindsay, and Paige. We've got you. We've got Derek Parkus here. Who else is around this area that reports for us? I'm trying to think of some more folks.
Bianchi,
like five or six.
You can travel here, Bianchi.
Yeah, you want to come, Bianchi? You want to come meet us?
Visit.
Meet you at the Creek Travel Grounds? Weekend before Thanksgiving.
The Creek Tribal Grounds.
Yep. Santa Rosa Creek Tribe.
You
I'm a member. They may be a member. What's that?
Yeah. Oh, you should have some on your show so we can ask some questions.
I've been trying. Now, the chief is Chief Dan Skyhorse. He's a friend of mine. I've been trying to get him on the show. He's really busy. I've been trying to get the various acts to call in, you know, some of the folks from different tribes. In fact, I want to go back because there's a friend of mine that I only see at the powwow. It's Chief Black Eagle. He's a Cherokee chief. And there's some of the other folks that I've gotten to know and some of the tribal members. And the only time we really see each other is at powwow because, you know, I'm busy with the show and I'm, you know, I'm not on the tribal council. But, yeah. What's that? I'll get them on.
The reason I ask that is because there's a lot of activists claiming things that Creek that people done because their skin wasn't white, and actually it was Creek Indians, even though their skin weren't white. And that's plagiarization of culture bandage, if you ask me.
Cultural appropriation, I think is the colloquial, but yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So I'll talk to Chief Dan. See when I can get them on the show. In fact, they actually had a Creek theme. We had a special. I want to play it for you now. Dan's not here, obviously, but I want to play this. We have the Creek Tribe Report theme. This was made specially for us by a Creek chief. Actually sang this for us. Let me see if I can find it here. Creek Tribe. So yeah, here we go. So the only time I ever play this is when Chief Dan is on the show. So Chief Dan is not here, but I want to play this anyway, just to let you know how special some of the things are that we've done and the fact that the Creek Tribe may be a member. So this is what we play before Dan's report. Yeah, let's get it right up here. Here we go.
Hey, oh, hey.
The drum, heartbeat of the Creek people, like the first heartbeat you hear before you were born, like the heartbeat of the living spirit in all things. Join us each week at this time as we explore issues and topics important to the Santa Rosa Creek Tribe and American Indians across this great country.
Join in as we enter the world of the Creek Tribe and see the world as they do through the eyes of Chief Dan Skyhorse, or in the Muscogee language, Chothloko Suta Miko. So if you don't want to go to powwow after that, I don't know what will get you there. Isn't that amazing? That was made for us, especially. Wow, I stumped my panel. You guys are still there? Hello? Where did my panel go?
Sorry,
yeah, we're still here.
I had to unmute and I was going to stop for the refrigerator. I didn't want to.
I thought I was off the air again. I thought I had to call into my own show. You guys had me worried for a minute there. Is that amazing, though?
I have to make a salad for lunch, Chico.
Oh, okay, fine. I understand. You know, these are your salad days. Yeah, no problem. Never understood what that expression meant. Anyway, so what we're going to do is I'm going to bring Chief back, Chief Skyhorse. But they named me, too. They gave me the name Skytalker, which is Oponyo Suta. And so I have my Creek name. I was made a member of the Creek tribe for broadcasting Creek on the air. I mean, I actually went out and sought the Creek tribe to bring them onto WEBY. And then they made me a member of the tribe. And so it's really a disappointment to not get the folks back on regularly. This is why I bugged Dan. But I also want to get Native American news or American Indian news, you know, nationwide. And I want to make that a regular feature of the show again. And so hopefully I'll make some contacts out at the powwow. Some folks will be able to call in on a somewhat regular basis. And so we'll have, you know, and Native American folks don't, it's interesting that apparently American Indian is preferred to Native American, which is kind of interesting. Because Native American could be anybody. So, yeah. All right. If you have any comments on that, let me know. Otherwise, I shall get on to the company town and how America has become
a
company town. All right. So there's a famous song. I think it was the words were written by Tennessee Ernie Ford. I forgot who sang it, but you've probably all heard this. You load 16 tons. What do you get? Another day older and you're deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me because I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store. Yeah, so that was it. It was a place where you would go. Well, let me just read the article. It's from a website called What Really Happened, the history the government hopes you don't learn. And there's no author. This is written anonymously. I have no idea when this is written. I have no idea who wrote it. But if you go to the website, What Really Happened, and then look up the article, Company Town, this is where I found it. It says, in the early 1900s, one of the worst abuses of workers involved what we called the company town. This is a town wholly owned by a mining company in a remote location. Workers were attracted to move there by the lure of high wages. However, once there, they discovered that the cost of living was even higher, kept there by the company store, the only source for the necessities of life. The company was free to hand out high wages, meaning they would take the same money back and in as profits at the company store. It's kind of like taxes, right? No matter how hard the workers tried, they could never make enough money to live on and would be in debt to the company store. As long as they were in debt, the company could legally prevent the workers from leaving. It was a form of corporate slavery concealed in a bookkeeping trick. I don't talk about this very much, but this is one of our one of the saddest chapters in our history. And this is why I'm a big fan of private unions and a big studier of labor history, because we have this horrible thing happen. Everybody talks about slavery. Slaves weren't in debt. Now, I'm not saying slavery was good. Slavery was horrible. But slaves were not in debt. They didn't owe the slave master anything. So leaving, you know, when slaves were recaptured, they didn't come back and they didn't have to pay a debt for leaving. But if you left the company town and you still owed money, you know, I mean, you literally had to escape. You had to run away and disappear in the night, you know, and if they, of course, in those days, they didn't have the internet, they couldn't trace you, but they owned you. You literally were owned by the company. Comments?
That's what happened to the Jewish people also, you know.
They in Egypt or where?
Yeah, in Egypt, the Jewish. They were enslaved for 400 years. They trade themselves for food. So they were struggling.
But that was a government. That was Pharaoh. That wasn't a company.
Well,
so we're talking about a company.
Here.
We're talking about a company
owning
people.
Here they were sold. People from Africa sold their own people. So, you know.
Right.
Every time I hear the complaint and blame and white, they need to blame the African people that stole their own people.
Let's I want to, not that slavery is not a good topic. It is.
Yeah, go ahead.
In terms of a company, think about that. The company owns you. So if you work for Sacred Heart, for example, you know, the big health thing in Pensacola, and you had to shop in the Sacred Heart, you know, store, and you had to dine at the Sacred Heart cafeteria. If this was the only thing for, 200 miles, and whatever money you made at Sacred Heart, you know, they paid you in scrip, and you had like these credit slips, and you have to, you have to give over your credit at the company store and the company, buffet. And if you didn't have enough scrip to pay for it, you say, okay, fine, we'll just run a tab. We'll give you credit for, what you can't afford to pay for now. Right. So you're always racking up credit. There's no credit limit. Just rack up more and more debt. They own you. That's how bad this was. Now, people might say they're owned by the corporation now, but there's no job you can't, there's no private job. Government jobs, and even then, I don't think so, but there's no job you can't walk away from. But you can't walk away from a company town if you owe them money. Legally. That was scary, and that's not talked about a lot. It should be. Let me give you another paragraph. The abuses of the company towns eventually led to the formation of labor unions and threatened at one point to spark a communist revolution in the United States. The threat of such a revolution caused corporations to adopt more humane attitudes. Yeah, you bet they did. As the word spread of what a trap the company towns could be spread through folk songs similar to the one above, which I sang rather badly, workers simply refused to sign up, and the company towns faded into history. So people got smart, okay? In the same way unions, I don't have a problem with unions. I never have. Government unions shouldn't exist because government workers can't strike. Government workers, can't negotiate their contracts with politicians. They should negotiate them with the taxpayers. We're the ones paying the bill. We're the ones who should vote on their contracts. But that's a different story. Anyway, it says, I received a lot of email regarding the article. The United States government is dying. That's what I'm going to get to next. Most of it, it says, and here's where it gets interesting. It says, the negative email always seems to point out the standard of living Americans have, usually defined in terms of the possessions we own. But for the most part, we don't own the things we display to others for their esteem and admiration. The vast majority of Americans are deeply in debt for the items that they buy. TV sets, cars, recreational vehicles, vacations, even supermarkets have credit card machines to purchase food with. Using credit for the basic necessities of life has become so ubiquitous that it's almost invisible. Think about what's happening now. The cost of living is so expensive, people are using their credit cards for food, for everything. They're maxing out their credit cards simply to survive. We are country, company town.
We're out
everybody,
of control.
Everybody's
Americans
in debt.
Americans are getting in debt with a credit card, definitely.
Yeah. So the article then says, the debt-based economy has turned the entire nation into a company town. Americans are living on borrowing, and when the economy slows down, the repayment of those loans becomes a trap. Eventually, the lenders acquire those few things Americans own that actually have any worth, namely their homes. Yeah, there you go. And anything repossessed, right? So if you're foreclosed, you can pay and pay and pay and still have your home foreclosed. It can be taken from you because you don't own it. You're borrowing it from the bank at interest. And then it says, and it is worth reminding to those readers who claim that our nation is still doing well, that private ownership of homes has been in decline for quite some time. Whereas home ownership was the reality for most of our parents and grandparents, a far larger percentage of Americans are now renting. Americans are working their lives out, and at the end, they have little but a few status icons to show for it. Let me read that sentence again. Americans are working their lives out, and at the end, they have little but a few status icons to show for it. I think most Americans die in debt. I would bet. It says our rear ends are well decorated with designer jeans, but if you think about it, blue jeans are pretty much what the workers in those older company towns wore into the mines every day. Is there any difference between blue jeans you wear made expensive with a designer label and their blue jeans made expensive by the company store? Is it not really the same trap at work? You guys know the story of denim?
Hey, the blue jeans in Ukraine are very expensive.
Mm-hmm. But here's what's interesting.
Here you can buy them full of holes now and pay a lot of money for blue jeans nowadays.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, I used to tell the story when I was a tour guide that denim, that's sort of a contraction of a French word. The fabric that was made comes from a place called Nimes, N-I-M-E-S, in France. And it was, if you got dead, it was de Nîmes, de meaning of, you know, Nîmes, France. So de Nîmes became denim. That's where the word comes from. It's a French word, meaning of Nîmes. And so this fabric importer, the Strauss family in New York, found this fabulous fabric, and they thought it'd be a great thing out west. So in the 1800s, the Levi Strauss family, you know, used to import denim from Nîmes, France. This really tough fabric, and they used it for wagon covers and for tents and for things like that. Well, then this guy, and I've forgotten his name, actually took this material from de Nîmes, and he put on copper rivets instead of buttons. And he was an inventor in Ohio. I mean, excuse me, in Reno, Nevada. So he was a Nevada tailor that came up with the design for the blue jean. But because Levi Strauss and the Strauss family had all the money, they got the patent. So they shouldn't be called Levi's. They should be called this guy who invented them. He's a tailor in Nevada. You can look him up, Pianki, if you have a second, real quick, or Josie. Look up the inventor of the jeans, and the one that actually put on the copper rivets and made what we know as jeans today. Anyway, so Levi got the patent. He made all the money. He imported the fabric from France, turned them into blue jeans, and sold them out west at a huge profit. That's where it came from. Mm. And we still have them today. Mm. So we're still wearing the same work clothes that peasant
same
gold
thing.
Miners, you know, wore, except we pay a lot more money for them because we're a company town.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. What's his name?
Good.
It starts with Pianki. Do you have a second look it up? I can do it, but I'm sort of trying to do a radio show. I forgot to say, it starts with a P. There's a tailor.
Levi Strauss?
Levi Strauss had a tailor that actually put together the first jeans. I could probably look him up myself.
I'll see if I can find him.
Yeah, look up Levi Strauss and the inventor of the jeans. Patton, what was his name? He was the tailor in I think it was Nevada, which actually came up with the he's the one that put the copper rivets on. Levi Strauss didn't do that. He was just a fabric importer. Anyway, let me get to the article here and give Pianki a chance to look that up. So anyway, there we go. So this is back to the article. During the boom times of the 90s, the media assured us that the economy was doing wonderfully, that the good times would roll on forever. In reality, 80% of the population suffered a decline in living standards. This is in the 90s, folks. And to make up for it, they bought on credit, assured that eventually there would be money to pay for it all. Then the crash happened. People are losing their homes, their retirements, their businesses, all those things they had worked for that had real worth, lost to that company store called the debt-based economy. The trap is that the U.S. government has been running itself pretty much the same way. Never able to balance its books, the U.S. government just keeps borrowing and borrowing to make ends meet. The people get stuck with the bills. The interest alone now exceeds all the income tax paid by all U.S. citizens. Well, that's interesting. So we have to borrow money just to pay the interest on the debt from the money they borrowed. That's scary. Then it says you're not supposed to notice, of course, since taxed into near poverty, you too are living on your credit cards. And never mind that the government borrows so much money that it drives interest rates up, making the money you do have to borrow more costly to repay. That's called inflation, folks. That's what he's talking about. For those, well, it could be her.
Jacob
sure
Davis.
Who is Davis? That's right. What was his name? Jacob.
Go down. Jacob. Jacob Davis.
Jacob Davis. That's right. Thank you. So if you want to give credit where credit's due, the inventor of the
Davis from Latavia.
Oh, well, tell me the story. You got the article there. What does it say?
Where he was a Latavian immigrant. And
you mean Latvian? I think Latvian is what you're thinking.
Latvian, yes. I'm sorry. And, you know, let's get back to immigrants. They bring something of value to the country.
Uh-huh.
But, Levi was a German immigrant, and Jacob Davis was from Latvia. So
I wonder what his original name was, because it wasn't Davis. And I think the Strauss family is Jewish. So they were German Jews. You know, I'm sure in Germany that wasn't the place to be even in the 1800s if you're Jewish. So anyway, so the Strauss family comes here, become New York fabric importers. This guy comes from Latvia, Jacob Davis, you know, puts copper rivets on fabric and makes pants that are still famous. But they should be called Jacobs. They shouldn't be called Levi's. So let's give credit where credit's due. So, hey, you look great in your Jacobs there. But he's the inventor.
Yeah, he had an idea of putting copper rivets at the point of most strain on the pants so that they were whole.
Yep. Because the button didn't work. Yeah. So there's a little historic trivia for you folks that, so immigrants, now the whole point of immigration is not to give the immigrants a better life. The whole point of immigration is to give Americans a better life. That's why we bring people into the country. We bring people into the country to make life better for Americans. That's the whole purpose of immigration. I don't give a damn if somebody wants a better life and they're outside the country. If you're outside the country and you want a better life inside the country, apply. Come legally. We do have immigration. Okay? But we have enough people not doing anything. We don't need to import people not doing anything. We have enough welfare bums in this country. We don't need more. So do something. If you want to come here, do something productive. I mean, that's not such a big deal. Or what I'd still like to see is Trump should go to El Salvador. I really wish we could do that. Chelsea, do you have any context? I mean, El Salvador is not that big a country. I don't imagine it'd be hard to reach the president.
Do you have
any news contacts or friends or connections with El Salvador? Because I'd love to have him on the show.
I have customers that come and shop, but they're not my friends. You know, they're just customer, and I don't have their personal information.
Okay.
But they tell me stories.
Well, just for the fun of it.
Shopping. Yeah.
Just for the fun of it, if you could contact maybe the El Salvadorian consulate or El Salvador, I don't know if you can email, I guess you could, email the government of El Salvador directly, tell them we have a show, and I'm sure, you know, Spanish being all your first language, you can communicate a whole lot faster than I could. I know the president speaks English, but I'm just saying, you might be in a really good position.
Yeah.
Give it a shot.
Yeah.
Email, I don't know,
good
call,
idea.
Use the Skype line. And see if you can get the president of El Salvador on the show. And then what I want to do is send that to...
I don't know.
No,
about
I'm serious.
That.
Well, you know me. Always be ambitious. Always shoot for the stars because you never know where you're going to get.
Yeah.
But that's something that I could send to, you know, my new friend at Lindell TV, Emerald Robinson, and say, hey, can you get this to Mike Lindell? Maybe Mike can get it to Trump. Let's get the president of El Salvador talking to Trump, and let's see if they can work out a freedom industrial growth pact or something. You know, so let's show that freedom works in El Salvador so much that people want to go there, you know, instead of here.
Yeah.
That's where I'm going with this.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
well,
we're the Ideas Factory.
Hopefully my ID report and some of your, your bills, they might get to Trump, but right now he's so busy, poor guy.
Oh, I know.
Muy busy.
I know.
Right now.
I don't care. I've got a show to do. I you know, I want to get him on. You know, we've got things to do.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Or if one of us, listen, I'll take the kids. You know, if Donald Jr. or Eric wants to call, or I don't think Ivanka's, I think she'd be favor some of the things we're doing. But you know, let's get the dudes. Let's get the Trump dude juniors, and let's get them on the show.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I'll start there. We'll work our way up. I mean, I know Donald's busy, but you know, this is a good idea. Trump should go to.
Yeah.
Should go to El Salvador and bring in, you know, several billion dollars of investments and show that freedom works on the condition that they are free, that this is a free market situation that they're coming into. And I think they could work out a really great deal. I like this idea. All right. Almost done with this article. Then I'll get to the other one here.
Okay.
We might take another quick break. We'll see. Let me talk about, okay, there we go. So the last paragraph says, so for those who claim that an economy based on debt rather than on worth is a good thing, it usually is from the point of view of the bank, which gets to print up those debt notes at whim and then lend them out at full value. But for the people who are trapped into paying the interest on all those debt notes spent, the nation has been turned into one gigantic company town where prices are always kept just a hair above wages, where the people are kept in perpetual debt so that no matter how hard they work, the vast majority of Americans can never buy their soul back from that company store. That's pretty profound. Comments? Got to thinking.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got to thinking.
Yeah,
debt,
exactly. Yeah. So what are the solutions? Well, I have one solution. The first and most important one is our constitutional amendment to take away the power of Congress to borrow money. You read something like this, you know, let me read that last paragraph again. I think this is really profound. And then I want you to think about taking away the power of Congress to borrow money. And then I'll explain why that's so important. It says, for those who claim that an economy based on debts rather than on worth is a good thing, it usually is from the point of view of the bank, which gets to print up those debt notes at whim and then lend them at full value. So they take something, they take nothing, and they lend it out for something. So they create something out of nothing and charge you for it. That's what a debt-based economy is. Then it says, but for the people who are as trapped into paying the interest on all those debt notes spent, the nation has been turned into one gigantic company town where prices are always kept just a hair above wages, where the people are kept in perpetual debt so that no matter how hard they work, the vast majority of Americans can never buy their soul back from the company store. So let's talk about unemployment for a minute. Unemployment is judged to be zero when it's 4%. That is irrational. That is 2 plus 2 equals 5. Unemployment is zero when it's zero. Okay? Unemployment is zero when it's zero. All right? Inflation, they say, 2 to 3% is natural. No, it's not. It should be zero, or it should be negative 2 or 3% deflation. That's where we need to get to. Okay? The idea of inflation and unemployment, this is how the entire American population is kept down. Unemployment is set at 4%. It's kept by the federal government. Unemployment is kept at around 4%, so there's always pressure on people to take wages below what they should be accepting because they're more afraid that somebody else is going to take that job. So as long as you have that pressure of unemployment, people will accept lower wages. So the companies are happy, the government's happy, and the people are not because they take a job less than what it's worth, and they can't pay their bills, and they have to borrow on credit. Well, the government's happy with credit too. They love it. The banks love credit because they get to loan you money. So the more money people have to borrow as opposed to the more worth they have in their possession, the better it is for the bankers and the government, the worse it is for the people. That's why they keep it there. So that's unemployment. Inflation is the same thing. The government keeps 2 to 3% inflation because they want to steal 2% of the value of your money so that you have to keep borrowing. So they're transferring 2 to 3% of the money that you have to them. Well, that's not zero.
Yeah, you wonder why come the government have anything to do with that anyway.
Because they make money off it. Well, the Fed does. And I'm not sure what the government interest in inflation is, except that the government creates. Inflation's a byproduct. Now, there's an article I had here somewhere on why governments love inflation. I think they love inflation because it makes their debts look lower. If you borrow $1 million, you know, a day in debt, well, it's probably $1 million an hour, whatever it is. You know, when the government borrows $1 million, you know, a year later, that $1 million, they still have to pay back $1 million, but $1 million isn't worth $1 million. It's probably only worth, you know, $900,000 after a couple of years. So they're really paying back $900,000 in value for what it really is, $1 million, because the money's not worth as much. So the more they can inflate the currency and create more dollars out there, the lower the national debt actually becomes in terms of value, not in terms of number of dollars. They still have to pay them back. And the interest has to be paid back. But in terms of value, you know, if you make $100 today, it's worth like $99.50, you know, next week or whatever. So the value that you have
disappears. Well, people want to blame high inflation. They want to blame high inflation on the pandemic.
No, it's got nothing to do with it. No, inflation, the sole cause of inflation is the borrowing of some $5.2 trillion in COVID spending. That's it. That's the sole cause of inflation. Inflation has nothing to do with prices. Inflation solely is government borrowing and then the printing of money to cover those debts and the printing of securities. That's what inflation is. Now, do prices rise? Of course they do. Well, why do prices rise? Because the money's worth less. So prices rise because the money that you have is worth less. And then you hear economists, you hear people on the news, and they make this stupid statement. Oh, 2 to 3% inflation is natural. That's the goal of the Fed. Really? The goal of the Fed is to steal 2 to 3% of our money. You know why they said it that way? Because that's what Americans can tolerate. They don't tolerate 5% inflation or 8% inflation. They get all upset with that. But they'll take 2 or 3% because it's not stealing enough to bother them. Well, it bothers me. I don't want anything stolen. In fact, I want the money back. So, dear friends who listen to Action Radio, how do we get the money back? How do we reverse inflation? What's the opposite of inflation?
Deflation. Well, exhale.
Deflation. Deflation. Yes.
Jackie gets deflation.
Okay. Well, think about it. All right. Only play this just for fun. I haven't played this for fun.
Well, let me tell you quickly.
Action Radio. Dangerously cool. I love doing that here. Let's get our cheer for Pianki. So this is the word that is never spoken. We never say the word deflation. Why? Because it's the reversal of money. Instead of the money being transferred to the government and the banks through inflation, it transfers the money through deflation back to the people. Oh, isn't that interesting? Josie, you had a point?
I believe the American people were trained for years and years and years to be slaves of this government, paying taxes on your house over and over and over and over. It never ends. And the first time you're late on your taxes, they come after and take your property away. This is criminal. These criminals, they've been doing this for years. I mean, yes, if you buy an item, you should go pay tax on a pair of shoes or on that shirt or whatever, or a car.
Would you like to write another bill?
Huh? What?
Would you like to write another bill? This one should be fairly simple. The redefinition of home ownership. Redefinition of home ownership.
It's all going to change in a few months, sweetie. I don't want to write a
bill. Yeah. Okay. I believe when I see it. All right. I'll write this bill. Or Pianki will write this bill. Or somebody will write this bill. We need to redefine home ownership.
Right,
I understand. I'm busy too. But we need to. I'll put this in my master list of 178 bills I have now ready to write or thinking about writing.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Listen, I'm a busy boy. Right. I get stuff going on. So we need to redefine home ownership. So home ownership, the only tax you should pay is sales tax. That's it.
That's right. That's it.
And that's a one-time thing.
Every year, everybody gets a tax. And what happens is people go through a crisis, or they come and take your house away and you're homeless. Mm-hmm. That is criminal. Criminal, and these people have been getting away for a long time. Mm-hmm. The IRS, really, I was watching some people that used to work for the IRS, and they're criminals. We should not even be paying taxes on our work at all. No, only things that we buy. They're taking away our Social Security. They're taking everything away. And, you know, it's absurd what's been happening to this country, but it's all going to change. Next year, you're going to see everything turn around. So I'm not going to write a bill because I already know what's coming. Our money's going to change. We are going to collapse this year, but there's a lot coming. Our money's already in place, ready to go in Texas, our new money. So all this corrupt, people making all this money over and over and over, the Rothschild and all these crooks, the Vatican and the United Nations, they're all behind all this thing. And they're going to have to eat their money. The Clintons, the Bidens, the Pelosi, all these people, Obama, are going to eat all the money that they're stealing from us right now. They're sending $40 billion with a B to the Ukraine. Those people are only getting crumbs. All the money is being in their bank accounts. People are criminals, and they're going to have to eat their money. Yeah, we're not going to exchange their money. They think we are, but we're not. So a lot's happening. A lot's going to come down the pike soon. So Mike Lindell was telling Mike Adams that President Trump will be in office the end of this year. So with that say, I don't think we're going to have elections. I think the elections are going to be corrected until the 2020 elections is corrected completely. But my opinion. Are you there? Hello?
I'm here, Josie.
What happened to Greg?
I'm sorry. I forgot to unmute myself.
I thought the FBI came in and grabbed him.
See, we all do it. We all do it. And I was talking the whole time,
FBI,
too. That's the funny part. Why isn't she hearing me? See, now I think they're cutting off my signal. But no, I forgot to unmute myself. Well, here's the thing, Josie. I have trouble believing a lot of that until I see it happening. I just don't see it. Actually, it's probably better because I was interrupting you the whole time. So it's probably better I was muted. But here's the thing.
Yeah, I'm glad you were muted.
But until I see some evidence of this, you know, and here's the thing, too. Trump cannot take office until January 21st of 2023. He can't. Because if he does,
back,
he can't.
He's coming back to claim what he won in 2020. He's going to finish two more years. He's going to be in office the end of this year.
Okay, that's not going to work then. Then he can't run in 2024 because he'll serve more than 2 years. So here's the flaw in that theory.
He's going to finish the 2 years that belong to him.
Right.
Okay.
But he can't
we
do it.
We cannot allow this criminal.
Josie,
yes,
you're not listening to me. Josie, he can't do it until January 21st because that would mean he would serve less than 2 years. He has to serve less than 2 years in order to run again. That's in the Constitution. It's the 22nd Amendment. He has to serve less than 2 years.
His elections were stolen.
Josie, you're not listening to me. Josie, I know that.
Yeah, I am listening.
That's my point. He can't take office before January 21st. Otherwise, he will serve more than 2 years. That counts as a term. That means he can't run again because he will have served two terms, even though the first draft of it was stolen. He can't take office until January 21st of 2023, which means
he
served less than 2 years. What's that?
Yeah. I know he's going to finish the 2 years of his election. Yeah.
Okay.
He's going to finish the 2 years.
I've already stated it. Anyway, so let's go back to this.
Yeah, I know. Heard.
Okay. You don't believe me, though. It's kind of funny. Let's move on to the next article.
Different.
Okay, fine. All right.
Yeah.
I'm going to mute you.
Go ahead. Read your article. I'm going to continue. I'm going to have to peel my eggs here. I'm making a salad.
Peel. Pianki, what are you doing now that we're all – I'm doing a radio show. Josie's making a salad. Pianki, what are you doing?
I'm looking at hot air balloons under the title of what causes inflation.
you full of air balloons? Hot air?
Hey, have you ever been up in a hot air balloon, just out of curiosity?
No. I'm afraid of heights.
No, I ain't never been up one of them.
Put it on your bucket list. I took my daughter for her birthday when she was younger. We went up on a hot air balloon ride over, it was supposed to be over Napa, but Napa was foggy. So we went, I don't know where we went, but it was beautiful. So we spent a couple hours in a hot air balloon. That was fun. Because we're going over these people's backyards. And, of course, you're out in the open, right? You're standing in a basket. And so my crazy kid was, like, leaning out a little too far. I had to haul her butt back into the gondola. But she'd be yelling at people who are flying over, "Hey, nice barbecue." We'd be like, you know, 100 feet overhead going by in this balloon. It was hysterical. A couple hundred feet. And so, yeah. Hi, we're up here. I love balloons. Balloons were great fun. All right. Seriously, folks. All right, so back to this article here. The U.S. government is dying. Originally written as a response to a reader letter, the article is reposted due to numerous requests. And this is from the website, What Really Happened, The History the Government Hopes You Don't Learn. There's no author. There's no date. I don't know when this is written. But it says the U.S. government is dying. The U.S. government is dying. Its ultimate fate was sealed the moment the Federal Reserve fiat money system was put into place. Like a recreational drug user enjoying that first chemical rush, those who created the Federal Reserve luxuriated in the seemingly endless flow of money pouring forth from the Federal Reserve, money used to prolong and consolidate power, money spent without worry in the full knowledge that it was going to be someone else's problem to pay it all back. But now the U.S. government is paying the price for that glorious free spending time of so long ago. Like a recreational drug user now turned hopeless addict, the government has taxed profitable businesses into seeking friendlier homes and lands, and has turned to looting trust funds, that'd be Social Security, and paying bookkeeping games trying to hold off the final collapse. The U.S. government is dying. No longer able to conceal the financial losses, the U.S. government, like a desperate addict, is turning to crime as a source of funds. Crime on a global scale, conquest, war for profit, call it what you will. An invasion and looting of a nation is different from an invasion and looting of a home, only in scale. The U.S. government has been making bad decisions since at least the 80s. In hindsight, a government composed almost entirely of lawyers should not have been expected to know anything about how to run an economy based on manufacturing. As a result, legislation was passed that encouraged manufacturing to leave this nation. The lawyer politicians, rather than admit error, tried to conceal this loss by inventing the service economy, a ridiculous notion that one can prosper a nation by doing each other's laundry for a fee. The service economy did not bring money into the nation. It merely moved what was left around faster, increasing opportunities for taxation. The effect of this was that cash flowed from the people to the government. Good for government, struggling with a crushing debt load, but bad for the people, for the nation, 80% of whom suffered and continued to suffer a steady decline of living standards throughout the 80s, 90s, and into the 21st century. Minus the manufacturing of actual products, investors flocked to more speculative venues, many of which turned out to be gigantic stock manipulation swindles. But rather than address the problems, the government started playing its own bookkeeping games, looting Social Security and claiming it was a budget surplus. Knowing that the stock market was in trouble, the plunge protection team was created to use government-sanctioned rigging to keep the numbers high as a political banner, even though such activity may be the underlying problem of overvaluation. We talk a lot about, break from the article for a second, we talk a lot about indexes, you know, the rate of inflation, the rate of unemployment, the consumer price index, all these different things. All those numbers were changed. So the reason they focus on the 90s, Bill Clinton changed the way we measure things. He changed the way we measure unemployment. He changed the way we measured inflation. He changed the way we measure the consumer product index. He changed the way we judge recessions. He changed everything about how we measure things to make him look better. There's a website called ShadowStats, ShadowStats.com. If you go to ShadowStats, they use the original formulas. And if you look at the original formulas, the unemployment rate during the crash in 2008 and beforehand in the 90s when things were bad, you know, it was about 25%. Well, that's what it was during the Depression. So we've had Depression-level unemployment several times. The rate of inflation is not 8% right now. It's more like 16 to 20% if you look at the way it was measured before. Unemployment is not 3 to 4%. It's probably 12%. So you can go to ShadowStats and take a look. The reason things look better than they did during the Depression is only because they changed the way they measured the numbers, not because the situation got better. Now, we don't have as many people out in food lines and bread lines and things like that suffering in the streets now because we have welfare and unemployment. And how are they paying for that? Debt. That's how they're paying for it. So the only reason we don't look like the Depression, even though we're in a Depression, is because the government is borrowing temporarily our way out of it. And the people that aren't working are causing everybody as much of a problem as the government that is creating this inflation, this artificial economy. Let me get back to the article. The loss of manufacturing to other nations meant that Americans had to buy more and more products once made in the USA from companies in other nations. It's even worse, though, when you think about it, because U.S. companies moved overseas. So U.S. companies took U.S. jobs, they moved to foreign countries, and they expect Americans to pay American prices for things that Americans used to make themselves, but they're produced by other countries, brought into this country by American companies. That's economic treason, as far as I'm concerned. Back to the article. This created the present $1.5 billion a day trade deficit. Let me say that again. This created the $1.5 billion, that's with a B, a day trade deficit. Normally, such a trade imbalance would drive the value of the dollar down, but a devalued dollar makes that portion of the government debt held by foreign interests increase, since the debt is held in the currency of the lending institution. I'm not exactly sure how that works. That's more of a Derek question, but basically what it means is it sucks. I'll put it bluntly. Back to the article. This was the rock and hard place the U.S. government found itself in. So deep in debt, it cannot even make the interest payments, unable to sell products to generate revenues to pay that debt because manufacturing was taxed into reloading and a threatened collapse of the dollar that would force a default on the debt and ruin the standard of living Americans had worked so hard to achieve. From that perspective, the war of conquest to grab oil and to force the conquered nations to use the dollar to keep demand for the dollar high looks like the best option for a bankrupt government. Let me go back to this other thing here, the way that the standard of living and the way things go. Trump changed everything. And Reagan didn't. Reagan talked a good game, and Reagan made a few good improvements with some tax cuts and some regulation cuts. But he also approved budgets that were wildly out of balance. Trump did too. It was his mistake. But what Trump did was he changed the economy. He put tariffs on foreign companies, so there was no advantage, you know, to using cheap labor to make things over there and try and sell them here, because he raised the cost of what it would cost to make things here. Car companies that moved to Mexico, you know, they tried to sell cars to back in the United States, and they wanted to take American jobs away, but have Americans pay American prices for cars made in Mexico. which would cost substantially less. And they wanted to keep that extra profit. And Trump said, no, you're not going to do that. We're going to tax your American, your tax cars made in Mexico so that they equal in price the cars made in the United States. So there's no advantage to doing that. In fact, I think he was going to do it even more. So that's what stopped that. So Trump changed everything. He actually had, and look what happened. It didn't take long. It took like 2 years before our economy was booming. Manufacturing was booming. Companies were moving back here in droves. People who had never had jobs before, especially in the Hispanic and Black population, got all kinds of jobs. Things were going great. Well, the government can't have that because they want an economy based on debt. They want us broke and subservient. So the things that made us great are the things that the government can't stand, and that's why they stole the government to get rid of Trump. It's quite fascinating how this is all working.
And, he,
and people still
–
go ahead,
Trump
go ahead,
is
Josie.
Not done yet.
Trump,
I
know,
is
he's not
done.
Done. Right, I know.
He's going to make America great again, even better.
Well, we,
before, like back
we
in the 60s.
Are going to make America great again. All of us are going to make America great again.
I know, but
he's only one person.
He has a lot of plans. He's going to change
mm-hmm.
a lot of stuff coming up.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of stuff.
I know.
I'm not sure
you...
if this is true or not, but since we're going to have brand new money, somebody
you can't
was
prove
telling
that.
Me.
You can't prove that. You
I
can't
know,
prove
but I'm just telling you what I heard,
okay?
I cannot prove it right now.
Yeah.
But one of the guys helping with the magazine, he said that we're going to get $100,000 per family, not per person, per family, to start circulating the new money. So are you going to buy your airplane, or are you going to buy food or a house?
Well, I need $1 million for my airplane, but I'm going to get the old fashioned way. I'm going to earn it through the show. But I don't believe that. Now, so there's the flaw right there. If someone comes to you and says, "I'm going to give you $100,000," you know they're lying. I'll tell you right now, they're lying. Why would they give you $100,000? Why wouldn't they keep it for themselves? And what's that $100,000 based
on? Money, Greg.
No. Yeah. See, this makes no economic sense. You can't just – because that money's going to be worthless. If everybody gets $100,000, that's worthless. That's worthless money. It's not based on anything.
No, it's going to be our new money.
No, but it's not based on anything. What's the value based on? I'm serious. This is a great example.
I don't know yet. They're not telling us.
Okay, well, they have to tell you. Then you can't accept it. You can't accept
a
new money system that's not based on anything.
They will.
Okay.
Okay, whatever. I'm just
no, but seriously, think about it. Think about it logically. Right?
Yeah, I already know.
Okay. See, the reason I spend time in this is, even though I think it's wrong, is because I think a lot of other people think the way you do, and that's fine. But I want to try and dispel this myth. You cannot introduce a money system based on nothing. We already have one.
But it's going to change. So the people...
And how's that going to happen? How's that going to happen legally?
Okay.
How's that going to happen?
It will
be legal. How? Is it going to be a constitutional amendment? Are we going
to
replace the Fed with something new?
All right.
But you see, I'm not challenging you. I'm challenging this argument. Because to me, economically, you cannot introduce a brand new money system, give everybody $100,000 of this new money system, unless you're going to replace the Federal Reserve note and replace the Fed. Because you can't have two monetary systems and two money systems in the same country.
We're not going
maybe
to have two
maybe
money
the euro.
System, only one. We're going to get rid of the corrupt one. They're going to have to eat and burn all that money.
So how is that going to happen worldwide? The dollar is used worldwide. How is that going to happen? What's that going to do to the world economy?
Donald Trump is not going to honor many of the countries corrupt involved with the Clintons, the Bidens, and the Obamas. He's not going to honor their dollar bill. They're going to have to eat.
How's he
going to
do that?
So a lot of,
how's
I don't
he
know,
do
but
that?
That's what I heard.
Okay. So this is what I say. What you've heard... Okay, we need to sort of limit this debate on what you've heard because it's pure speculation. I don't think it has any validity whatsoever. I think what they're talking about is madness. I think it's just a way to suck people in and distract from our real problems.
No,
we do have real
money,
problems. We have
the
two.
Money's in Texas since January the 7th, ready to
go. Yeah, okay. You got a picture?
Actually, David Stray had a picture showing all the new money, but I couldn't hardly see it.
Yeah, he's a fraud. He is a total and complete fraud. Yes, he is.
Well, that's
let me
what
get back to
believe.
My he's a
so that's why
fraud.
I'm not going to invite him to the show.
I've watched this stuff. He's a fraud. No, don't. Oh, please invite him to the show. Oh, my God.
But it's
invite
not,
him to
not,
the show.
Not.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, why? If you think he's a fraud, why should I invite him?
To give him a chance to prove I'm wrong.
He's a seal. Ex-seal.
He's a fraud.
And,
he's a complete fraud. Josie, he's
it's
a fraud.
It's not true.
It is true.
Well, that's your opinion, but we know better.
Well, of course, my opinion, and your opinion is true, so that doesn't get us anywhere. Saying something is somebody's opinion is redundant. Of course it's my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
I still want him on the show.
Don't say it's for a fraud until you know evidence, like with vitamins.
I got plenty of evidence. I've watched his videos.
Because they stole the election.
We know that. Okay. I know they stole the election. I'll tell you what, I can make an argument that I know the election was stolen because Biden has never done well nationally. Never. He never did well nationally when he had all his mental faculties. So the idea that he's suddenly going to do far better in a reduced mental capacity against one of the most popular presidents we've ever had intrinsically makes no sense. It's illogical. Mm-hmm. It's irrational. It's impossible to believe that Brandon, from his basement, not campaigning, not having anybody at his rallies, could beat Trump, who had 20 to 30,000 people waiting to get in. That's impossible to believe. You have to be either a liar or a moron to think that Brandon beat Trump. And I don't need a single election result. I can prove it on that basis alone.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? Okay. Mm-hmm. Let me get back to my article.
Hey, are you on till 10?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. But I have to get off. I have to get ready to go to work. Okay. I'm done with my salad. And you know the best way to peel eggs, Greg?
No, tell me. Tell me.
You get them off the stove. You get them off the stove. You run them through cold water, and then grab a bunch of ice and let them soak in. You know, and then they peel beautiful. So you can have a perfect peel egg when you put ice in it. Same thing with potatoes. The skin comes right off.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't usually make eggs.
It didn't
egg
take
salad.
Me long
just,
to peel my eggs.
I fry them or scramble them. That's pretty much my egg. I'm kind of boring when it comes to cooking. I don't have time. Let me play a couple things here, and I'll continue back with the article.
I'll continue listening. I got to go.
Have a good day.
Go earn my dollar, like Bill says.
Thanks, Josie.
Bye.
And we'll be right back in just a little bit here. I got some stuff to play. Here at Action Radio, we are looking for sponsors. We have 30 and 60-second spots available for your announcements, and we have 3-minute live call-ins to talk about your products and services available. Action Radio is the next evolution beyond talk radio. Join us and let us help your business evolve. Think about being a sponsor of the future and not just a listener, and help us help your business grow as you help us plunge headlong into breaking new ground here on Action Radio every day. This is Greg Penglis for Strikeforce, your source for pure energy. Strikeforce is a concentrated energy drink that turns a half liter of your favorite beverage into an energy drink. You make your energy drink yourself. Action Radio is an affiliate of Strikeforce, so our listeners get a 20% discount. All you do is add our code, WYL, to the discount code window at checkout. WYL comes from our website, Right Your Laws. So, you can get your energy drink, a 20% discount, and help Action Radio change the relationship of we the people to our government. Not bad. Strikeforce is at StrikeforceEnergy.com. That's StrikeforceEnergy.com. Start your engine. Joe Biden's Dark Winter. No freedom, no liberty, no guns, no representation, no oil, no coal, no nuclear power, no space force, no constitution, no family gatherings, no vacations, just taxes, work, misery, masks, lockdowns, and ever more government. This is what will happen if you let Marxists steal the election. This has been a public service announcement of Action Radio, reminding you it's time to get off your butt and save your country. This is Greg Penglis. So what is Action Radio? It is a radio show with its own citizen legislature. That's you, the listener. It is a fully interactive system of listeners, expert guests, social media, writing bills, legislator input, bill submission, lobbying, and citizen action. Action Radio is the future of talk radio, using all the available technology in one completely integrated new system.
You are listening to Action Radio Online with Greg Penglis. The webpage for all Action Radio shows and podcasts is blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Please share our show with all your friends and family, both nationally and internationally. The guiding principle of Action Radio is this: we the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed. It's morning, and you are a proud black man. You go to the mirror. You are reminded of Governor Northrop of Virginia and Prime Minister Trudeau of Canada, both of whom appeared in blackface. And there you are. You just put on your shaving cream. And what do you see? Whiteface. It's bad enough that leftist aspiring dictators are choosing to go in blackface. But you, proud black man, have no choice but to appear in whiteface every morning you shave. Now, direct from Pianchi Laboratories, comes a great new product made especially for you, proud black man. Pianchi's Picture Perfect Face Saving Shaving Cream. Yes, Pianchi's Picture Perfect Face Saving Shaving Cream will give you your black face back during your morning shave. For Pianchi's Picture Perfect Face Saving Shaving Cream is the first ever black shaving cream. Pianchi's Picture Perfect Face Saving Shaving Cream comes in three shades: dark, darker, and darkest. So now, proud black man, you have a choice. You can stay in whiteface every morning, or you can join black men everywhere and choose Pianchi's Picture Perfect Face Saving Shaving Cream every morning. I just imagine people for the first time listening to the show going, what the hell is he doing? I should explain that. I haven't played that for a while. There were several things that I made during the lockdown of 2020. In fact, I've forgotten which news person said, we're not going to call it COVID anymore. We call it the lockdown. Maybe it was Dennis Prager. And so I don't get mad. I get creative. And so there was a time Pianchi and I were on the show, much like we are now. And we were talking, and Pianchi was talking about how Governor Northrop of Virginia was in blackface. And he says, you know, he made the comment, says, yeah, I got to put on this white shaving cream in the morning. I have to go in whiteface. Well, you know, I had to do something with that. And so I made kind of a joke, a little commercial, part of our sarcasm here, as we poke fun at pretty much everything, not at Pianchi, but just at racism, fake racism, racism used for everything. And so we had a little bit of fun with that. Anyway, so let me get back to Pianchi's there. He's probably, I don't think he's making egg salad. That was Josie. Let me get back to my article here. Pianchi, you there? Let's bring you back into the show here.
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. Yeah. Have you ever shared that little tidbit that we made? The idea of it's on YouTube. I think I said it to you. We have a whole channel, the Action Radio channel, where I put all my sarcastic, my satire pieces on. Did you ever share that with anybody? I'm just curious.
No, not yet.
Okay. Well, if you ever want to, it's at the Action Radio page. Maybe I'll post that for people. All right.
What do you think about
go ahead.
What do you think about Mark Rubio?
In terms of what? Marco Rubio? I mean, he started off as a great senator. He said all the right things, and now he's become kind of a squishy moderate. I don't think he's done anything significant.
Yeah, I think he's done because he switched from on the issue of abortion from state rights. Now he wants a national law. I think he's done. His career should be done now, shouldn't it?
Yeah. You know, it's very interesting when we talk about this bill. I post something that Lindsey Graham, and I didn't have enough room to really explain it on Facebook, but Lindsey Graham, anybody that's posting a federal abortion ban, they're not doing it because they want to ban abortion. They're doing it because they want to hurt the Republican MAGA folks. They want to hurt the independents. They want to hurt the America First people that do want to have the states right, have the states take care of it. This is a state issue. This has always been a state issue. The Roe v. Wade decision was illegal the day it was written, before the ink was dry. That was an illegal decision because the Supreme Court cannot make up its own power. No government entity can. The Constitution, the most fundamental principle of the Constitution, is that these are the powers delegated to the states. And one of the most important things that was not delegated to the Supreme Court was the ability to interpret the Constitution. That is not there. There is no interpretations clause. So that the whole Roe v. Wade decision was illegal. It's just as illegal as Plyler v. Doe and the gay marriage decision and all the other things they do where they make policy. They cannot do that. And so if you want
to...
But
you're right.
Yeah.
You're right. And any federal law in that direction would be illegal too.
Absolutely.
Because the power is to reside with the state.
Exactly. So any Republican that is pushing a federal law knows damn well that it's not going to happen, that it's designed to either encourage Democrats or discourage Republicans, because it's just as illegal as the Roe v. Wade decision was. So why would they do that? Unless they were part of the deep state, unless they wanted to sabotage the campaign, unless they wanted to divide Americans further, because now you put people in a position of saying, people who don't want abortion, of not supporting a federal ban on abortion. And then people say, well, wait a minute, and the candidate's the same thing. You know, how can you say you're against abortion if you're not going to support a federal ban? And this is the trap. This is the rhetorical trap these folks are being put into.
Mm-hmm. You know the thing, Greg, that gets me with these candidates, politicians, these Congress people.
Mm-hmm.
If you are representing Santa Rosa County, Florida, you're a congressperson. Why are you trying to enact legislation that's going to affect me and I'm way the hell over here in Boulder City, Colorado?
Well, I'll tell you why. It's a good question. It's a really good question. People are elected from their districts, their congressional district. Now, my district is represented by Matt Gaetz. I'm in the first congressional district of Florida. So should Matt Gaetz do everything to represent me only in Santa Rosans only to the exclusion of the rest of the country? I would say no. Because although they are elected by congressional districts, the Congress deals with national legislation. So the whole purpose of the House is that it's directly accountable to people, because the people vote in the member of the House every 2 years. The Senate, the purpose of the Senate is to represent the states. And so we need to get back to that. We need to get rid of the 17th Amendment so that the states are represented. That's why every state has two senators, regardless of the size of the state, because it's not a population-based office. The state cannot be equal unless they have equal representation in Congress, and that's why every state has to have two senators, whether it's Rhode Island or California. They each get two senators.
Well,
that guarantees equal representation in Congress. Go ahead.
Yeah. Here's the thing. If you're from Illinois, you represent Chicago, and Chicago mm-hmm. is in Illinois where they don't allow you to have guns. Okay. Mm-hmm. And the people that elected you, that's what they wanted. Mm-hmm. So why would you try to impose on me that law, and I'm in, say, Louisiana, and they allow me to have guns? So why do you want to take my guns from me?
Well, they can't.
I didn't elect you.
And this is where a republic comes in. This is why we're not a democracy. If we were a democracy, then they could say, well, we're going to determine what the rights are in our area. They could say in Illinois, they could say, you don't have a Second Amendment. You don't have a right to own a gun. We've decided by popular vote, 1/50%, that nobody has a right to guns. They could do that in a democracy. This is why we're not a democracy.
Right.
So the whole point of a
Go
ahead.
He's passing legislation that's going to affect the whole nation so that, like your representative state area, mm-hmm. you don't, mm-hmm. your people don't want guns. Now you want to take my gun away and I'm not in your state. That mm-hmm. is totally wrong.
Right. Well, see, this is where the checks and balances, this is where the Supreme Court is supposed to come in and say that red flag laws are unconstitutional, that any touching of the Second Amendment in any way is unconstitutional. So anything that the federal government does that in any way touches the right to own and carry firearms is automatically unconstitutional, because the Constitution is the supreme law of the land. So the Congress cannot pass a subordinate law to the Constitution, nor can the Supreme Court issue a subordinate opinion to the Constitution that contradicts the Constitution. This is what people don't understand. This is the whole basis of a republic. A republic says that the Constitution is the supreme law of the land, not the people under it. So
well,
automatically
what about the
gun control. All right. But here's the thing.
If people in Illinois agree with reasonable restriction, why do people in Colorado have to agree with that? In other words, you have to be 21. You're 21 to own a gun. Mm-hmm. All right,
but
I think
you're missing my point here. No, the point is that the Constitution.
I think you're missing mine. I'm saying is that if you are elected in Illinois,
mm-hmm.
and you have these reasonable restrictions for the people in Illinois, okay, that's a state.
State or federal?
Then why
the
are you trying? Yeah, it's a state, because states, you have states where the age limit is different. It's different from one state to the other. Mm-hmm. So if you're representing that state, you have a high age limit. why are you trying to pass a federal legislation that's going to impose that high age limit over the entire country where you have some states that have a lower age limit and perfectly fine?
Well, they're probably doing it to stay popular, to gain power, for whatever. They're getting money for it. I mean, I don't know why they're doing it. My point is that it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter why they're doing it, because it's unconstitutional. You know, those laws are unconstitutional at the state level and at the local level, because the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, is supreme law of the land. Okay? So no government anywhere can impose any gun control on honest law-abiding citizens in terms of keeping and bearing arms, owning and carrying firearms. And the 14th Amendment guarantees, because we are citizens of the state in which we reside, as well as being citizens of the United States, that the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, covers everybody. And so this is why...
Well, it does, but you got right. some people that's willing, like those in New York, that's mm-hmm. willing to give it up. And I say, well, if people in New York are willing to give it up, Colorado should not try to convince them out of that if they want to have those type of restrictions.
Well, that goes against the republic. The whole principle of a republic is that the majority cannot vote away the rights of the minority. So if the majority, you know, wanted the Second Amendment universally, no exclusions, no nothing, the way it's supposed to be, then we wouldn't have a problem. The problem comes in because a majority in certain states wants to take away the rights, but they can't do it. They can't do it constitutionally because that right that's in the Constitution. All the states would have to agree. You'd have to take the Second Amendment out of the Constitution. And I know a lot of people would do that, and I think it would be obviously a huge mistake. But that's the only way around this. And I don't think that's going
to
happen.
Well, the same thing applies to abortion.
Right.
You're leaving it up to certain states. Certain states want to put certain restrictions on it, which mm-hmm. I agree they have a right to do. But if I'm from a state that says 14 weeks, and I represent that state as a congressperson, I should mm-hmm. not go to Congress and try to pass a national law that says 14 weeks, whereas you have some states say 15 or 16 weeks.
Yeah,
I should be
difference.
Doing that. I should be concerned about the state that I represent.
Right. But the difference with abortion, there's no right to abortion. There never has been. There never can be, because it doesn't deal strictly with individuals. And it's not mentioned in the Constitution. The Second Amendment, the right to keep and bear arms, is specifically mentioned in the Constitution as a guarantee that the federal government and through the 14th Amendment, the states and local governments will not touch your ability to own and carry firearms. Now, it says nothing about use of firearms, but they can't touch it. That's a republic. That is the guarantee of a republic that rights are established and they cannot be voted away. So you don't have to exercise them, but they can't be voted away. Let me finish the one you're talking about, because these are good examples, all right? So with the right to keep and bear arms, it cannot be voted away. Again, you don't have to exercise it, but nobody can take that right away from you, because that's enshrined in the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, the supreme law of the land. Now, the courts cannot then make up all kinds of things. They can't say, well, because of the Second Amendment, you can kill 50 people, but 51, you're going to be in trouble. No, it doesn't work that way. Let's talk about abortion. Rights, the definition of a right, it's an individual exercising it, not at the expense of anybody else. That's what a right is. So if you keep and bear arms, that's you. That's exercising that right for you. If you speak freely, that's you exercising your right to speak freely. Doesn't mean there aren't consequences for doing it. Doesn't mean there aren't consequences for using firearms. We're not talking about that. We're talking about the right. The right itself. The right itself is absolute. Okay. There is no right to an abortion because it involves more than one person. It actually involves three people: the mother, the father, and the baby. So abortion can never be considered a right. What's that?
On the Second Amendment, mm-hmm. Sheila Jackson Lee want to have a law on how you display antique guns. It says you can't. Saying you can't. Mm-hmm. But apparently in her district, there's concern on how antique guns are displayed. And mm-hmm. I'm saying that rather than you trying to enact a national law on how guns is displayed, you need mm-hmm. to enact a state law or a local law how guns are displayed in the district where people elected you.
No, see, and I would argue that the Second Amendment says that if you're regulating how people display guns, that's an infringement on keeping. You know, so you're telling people how to keep their arms.
Well, that
so
would be an argument,
wait a minute,
but the people that elected her say this is what we want.
Well, that's fine, but the people – see, this is but you're talking about a democracy. They're talking about people who are willingly tell other people how to live their lives and how to exercise their rights. And you don't have that right in a republic. The majority of people cannot vote away other people's rights.
In her district, where she is elected,
Overwhelmingly,
the people say, this is what we want. And I'm saying, Sheldon Jackson Lee then passed legislation for the district of the people that elected you, and don't try to impose a national regulation that's going to affect me, and I'm way the heck over here in Colorado.
Right. No, I agree with you there. First of all, she can't pass it at the national level because the Second Amendment precludes it. She actually cannot pass it on the state or local level either because the Second Amendment precludes it. So even if everybody except one person, even if the entire population of her district or the entire population of Texas suddenly said that we don't want anybody carrying guns in our district, we don't want anybody owning guns, we don't want anybody carrying guns, you know, and they all vote for it. The entire population, the entire adult voting age population votes for that. It still wouldn't matter. Because the Second Amendment is the supreme law of the land. You cannot pass a law supreme to the Constitution. So it doesn't matter what the law is. It doesn't matter what the ordinance is. It doesn't matter what, the regulations. None of those things.
Age limit for a person being able to carry a gun? What does the Second Amendment say about that? Nothing.
It doesn't.
In Missouri, the age limit is 18.
Uh-huh.
In another state, it may be 16.
Right.
Well, should the people in the sixth state that's 16 have their congressperson go to a Congress and pass a national law saying it's 16 going against Missouri, who says it's 18? No, they shouldn't do it.
Now you're getting a different issue. That's the age of majority. So in other words, do constitutional rights apply to people who are not adults yet? Do children have constitutional rights?
Well, yes, children have constitutional rights.
Okay.
You saying that unborn child has a constitutional right?
Absolutely. Yep, they have a right to life. Right to life and liberty
happiness
and health and property. Right.
Yeah, that congressperson that's representing her particular district or their particular district, they should enact things that's going to benefit that particular district and leave mine alone.
Right. But here's the thing, though. Let's talk about the age of majority. We know that things change, you know, in the same way that the Constitution doesn't specify a voting age either. And yet we assume that voting is something that comes when you reach adulthood. Okay. Now,
because some states you allow to vote at, you know, every state across the nation has an age of voting. Which is different. It's not the same.
I don't think so. I would question that. If you can find me a state where it's lower than 18, I'd be surprised. I know California wanted to make it 16, but I think 18 is the universal voting age because 18 is the age majority.
Yeah, but why come California couldn't make it 15 years age?
They may be able to for state elections, but they couldn't do it for federal. And I would argue against it because that's one of those rights that adults exercise. So you could say the same thing for
guns.
Then
that wouldn't be the concern of a U.S. congressperson. That's the concern of a state legislator.
But still, the concern of all of them has to be the Second Amendment, which is the supreme law of the land. I keep coming back to that. You cannot vote away people's rights. The only way to do that is to the Second Amendment prohibits the government from touching the ability to keep and bear arms at any age, really. Now, I'm not going to protest
liberty.
Okay, wait a minute. Let me get to that point in a second. I'm not going to protest when a state says that people exercise their right to vote and their gun rights when they become 18. I'm not going to protest that. Although technically the Constitution doesn't give an age limit, as far as I'm concerned, you know, the majority age is the age at which you can own guns, which you can, you know, drink, at which you can't, although that's not a constitutional right. But the thing is, once you're an adult, you're an adult. You can sign contracts, you can get married, you know, you're responsible for yourself. That's it. You're an adult. So you can own guns and sign contracts and own businesses and do all the things that an adult can do, vote, all that. That makes sense. Even though the Constitution doesn't specify an age limit, I'm not going to protest any state that says you have to reach the age of majority to do it. Because I think that's the way it is. I can't prove it. I don't know where it is in law. But as far as I understand, that rights, full rights, come with adulthood. And so if someone says you can vote at 16, that would not be a full right of adulthood. So I would disagree with that. Now, I don't know where it's challenged. It's probably challenged in court. But I don't want 16-year-olds voting because they're not responsible themselves, not paying taxes. So they can't vote.
Yeah, but regardless, a person can give up, because if the Constitution don't stipulate an age limit, then a person can, in one state, set an age limit, and another state can set an age limit. Mm-hmm. But what a problem is when that elected federal official wants to pass a national law to match what they're doing in their own district in their own state. And that's where the problem comes.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you remember the drinking age when the drinking age was 18? And that was because the Vietnam soldiers.
In some places, you can't go in a tavern unless you're 28 or 30.
Where's that?
In Missouri.
Really?
St. Louis area, there on Van de Venner. It got a sign. When you're ready to go in the door, you got to be show identification, you at least 30 years of age.
That's illegal. That's age discrimination.
It's not
as racial discrimination. Sure it is.
No, it's not. It's not illegal. If they say you can only come, you 30 years of age is a minimum age, 25 years of age is a minimum age that you have to be to come in here.
What if they said that, if they picked a race that couldn't come in there? What if they said, no gays allowed? Well, it's their company, right? Nobody under 30. What's the difference? Discrimination is discrimination. You can't do it. It's illegal. It's a civil rights violation.
But they are doing it.
Well, sure, because nobody protests it and nobody is suing them and kicking up a fuss. But it certainly could be. So here's an interesting argument. This is kind of what I was leading to. There are things that we condone. There are things that we tolerate. There are things that aren't absolute. They're not in the absolute thing. But to protest them makes no sense. Okay, I'm not going to protest with a gun age at 18 years old to own and carry. I'm not going to protest that, even though the Constitution doesn't have an age limit. I condone it. I understand it. That's gray area to me. Okay, so I don't think that's a problem. Now, a state not letting somebody go into a drinking establishment until they're 28, that's blatant age discrimination. That's a violation. That's a civil rights violation right there. Having people vote at 16 is a violation too, because it disenfranchises all the folks that are voting at 18. So you have an unfair voting population. So that's a discrimination right there.
How is it a civil right violation when the civilians agree to it?
Well, the civilians agreed to have black people kicked out of restaurants in the 50s. I mean, the majority segregation was democratically elected. The Democrat South democratically elected segregationists to enforce segregation. The majority voted for it.
Well, you got some organizations that keep white people out today.
Yes, right. That's illegal. If you're open to the public.
That
now,
is
if
the
you're,
people,
okay. All right, let's distinguish between
the people
themselves
agreeing to it.
Okay, now wait a minute, because this is another good point. Let's explore this a bit. There's a difference between a private organization and a business open to public accommodation, whereas a restaurant that's open to the public cannot say, we're only going to take white people and Asians. No blacks and Hispanics can come here. That's illegal, because you're open to the public. It's public accommodation. You have to, if you're open to customers, you have to be open to all customers. You can't say no gays can come in here. You can't say no Canadians. whatever group you want to pick, you can't say that. Now, if you're a private club, if you're the black ultimate frisbee club of Missouri, well, you got to be black to be in that club. It's a private club. I don't have a problem with that. I'm not a black ultimate frisbee
player. But the age
so it would
limit,
make sense for me to join.
The age limit is not restricting any particular group, any particular
sure it is.
Person. It's saying that you have to be a minimum age to come mm-hmm. in and sit at the bar.
And that's age discrimination. It's the same as if you can't work it here if you're over a certain age. So if a company said you can't work here if you're 52 or more, you can't work here if you're 58 or more, you can't work here, if you're over, we have mandatory, in fact, the government has mandatory retirement from law enforcement at 57. That's illegal. That's age discrimination. Now, if you want to let people go because they're too old to be able to do the job, that's a different story. Absolutely. And if you recommend that people leave at 57 with a full pension, that's okay too. But to force them out is age discrimination. Government does it all the time. Government has all kinds of restrictions. To say that people cannot go to an establishment that's open to the public, that's public accommodation, they have opened their doors to the public, and to say you can't come in here until you're 28, that is illegal. That is age discrimination. That is a civil rights violation. Because once you're 21, you have the right to drink. And if you have the right to drink, you have the right to go to a drinking establishment. That's why it's wrong.
I'm going to
he's looking stuff up.
Like I said before, for instance, like in Missouri, you couldn't buy liquor on Sunday. I'm on, but you can go over to Illinois right across the river and buy liquor.
So that's
now,
an interesting question.
You got a representative. You got a representative that voted in Missouri, and then they go to Congress and want to pass a national law. A national law that forbids buying liquor on Sunday. I'm saying that they should concentrate on where they was elected and leave other people alone.
Well, also, food and drink is not a delegated power from the states to the federal government, so they can't do it. Only in terms of interstate commerce. The only thing Congress can do in terms of food and drink is, as part of interstate commerce, make sure that those goods can freely cross state lines. That is what the whole purpose of the Interstate Commerce Clause is to make sure that goods and services can freely cross state lines. So the only jurisdiction that Congress has
over
that.
They tax it even if they don't. You've got private brewers that brew alcohol and it's taxed, and they don't sell it in no other state. Matter of fact, they may not even sell it in another county.
Oh, no, interstate commerce has nothing to do with whether something is sold within a state or not. Any business that see the grain that they make might come. I mean, the hops might come from Germany. You know, the barley might come from Kansas. The water's probably local. What's beer? Barley, malt. Where does malt come from? So beer is barley, malt, hops, and water, right? So if any of those things come from somewhere else other than the state, it's interstate commerce. I think hops, the best hops is the Holler Tower hops from Germany.
Yeah, but what I'm saying...
Yeah, the hops are German hops. It's a good stuff, yeah. What's that?
Getting back to my argument is that a U.S. congressperson like Matt Gaetz should concern on the people that elected him, the area that he was elected.
Well,
he shouldn't go to Congress and try to pass a national law that's going to affect me.
Right. No, I agree with you there. But let me clarify what you're saying, and then we'll get back. We can talk about this. This is another good point you're making, but I want to make sure that everybody you know gets the full range of the argument. Matt Gaetz and all the people that are in Congress, they are elected by a certain portion of their state, the congressional district, but they're elected to Congress dealing with national issues. So although they represent individual areas of their state, the bills that come before them have national impact, the budgets, you know, all the things, the regulations, the investigations, the oversight they do, everything that goes on in Congress impacts everybody because they are a federal legislature. So even though the members of the House are elected individually from districts and the senators should be elected from the state, you know, state government, but even representing the states in a popular election, they're still elected by a smaller entity than they have, than the issues they handle. The issues they handle are national. The National Defense Act, but, you know, military things. That, now, Gaetz gets a lot of military stuff because we got a lot of military here.
Well, I think people would agree on some of the things, national defense, so on and so on. But we get down to particulars. Like I may mention with Sheila Jackson Lee, who have a crime problem in the districts that she represents. And people are saying we need to do something about this. And she come up with a plan. I think that plan should only include where she represents, not me, in St. Louis County, Missouri.
Yeah. I said that makes sense. And the other requirement is that it's constitutional. So if what she proposes deprives rights, even in her own district, she can't do it. Because that's the protection of a republic.
Whether the Constitution addresses it in particularity. If it's not addressed in particularity, then it's not.
Well, then she can't pass
apply.
It anyway. If the Constitution, the states have not delegated, or the countries have not delegated to the Congress an area to legislate in, then she has no power to legislate in there. And that would include education, food, health. You know, all the things that they do now that they have no jurisdiction. Guns, they have no jurisdiction. In fact, they have specific prohibition against doing anything with guns. You know, so they have a prohibition against affecting our speech, religion, you know, our protests, as long as they're peaceful, our redress of grievances. They can't touch any of that stuff. They can't change the rights
to be accused.
I agree with
that. But
right.
when they start stepping beyond their bounds, especially about beyond
but
their
arguing,
electoral bounds, then it's wrong.
Yeah. Well, it is wrong, but you're arguing something that I think is already covered. It's already covered in the Constitution. Now, you still might have to challenge it because things pass all the time that are unconstitutional, and they have to be challenged. And that's why we have a system in place to do that.
I give you another example, Illinois and Missouri. Illinois requires 16-hour course of training, a classroom instruction before they issue a CCW. Missouri only requires 8. Therefore, Illinois will not do a reciprocal on a Missouri CCW license.
Mm-hmm. And I would argue that a CCW The CCW is unconstitutional because it infringes on your keeping and bearing arms. Now, is it a good idea for people to get training? Absolutely. Can the state require it and require you to carry a permit to exercise a constitutional right? Absolutely not. So it doesn't matter what the requirements are. It doesn't matter what the training is. It doesn't matter the hours. None of that matters because it's unconstitutional prima facie on its face.
Yeah, but when I go into Illinois, because my license was only for required a 8-hour course, they won't recognize it because their license require a 16-hour course.
Yeah, but they have no choice. I mean, that should be challenged on Second Amendment grounds. Both states.
It failed in the courts.
Because the courts have made the wrong decision. The only possible decision.
Yeah, but where else are you going to go?
Well, then you remove the people from court. See, the one of the big problems is nobody's really talked about getting rid of judges. Judges are only there for good behavior. And anytime a judge issues an opinion in direct violation of the Constitution, like the Second Amendment, that's grounds for removal. You kick them out of there. Go ahead.
You can't remove all judges at one time.
No, but you can remove a whole bunch of them.
They go from court to court.
I served as a judge for a while. Let me do it for a bit. I'll show you constitutional law.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is this, is that a congressperson elected in the first congressional district in Missouri should not be making legislation that's going to take away from somebody in another state in another congressional district.
Right. But see, the rest of Congress can argue that,
too. They were sent there by their own people, and that's where the problem comes in.
You're arguing a point that I don't think you need to worry about because, first of all, Sheila Jackson Lee's point is not going to get anywhere in the Congress. If it did, then we have a problem. But, I mean, there's people that Alcee Hastings used to introduce a nationwide gun confiscation bill every single year. Should he do that? No, of course not. Can he? Yes, of course he can. Is it going to go anywhere? No. There are people that introduce stupid bills every single year. For political reasons, for whatever reason, it doesn't matter. You're arguing that they shouldn't be able to put bills in that affect people beyond their district. And I understand that. But the Congress, that's the Congress's job.
No, I'm not arguing it. I'm saying that they should not.
Well, that's what I said. I said they should not be writing bills that affect people more than their district. Well, see, the whole point of Congress is to write bills for the nation. That's what they do. They are a national legislature. They write bills that affect the whole nation. That's the job of Congress. Now, I agree with you that just because people in her district want gun control for everybody, that she shouldn't be writing bills, you know, that bring gun control to everybody. But the real reason that she shouldn't do it is because they're illegal. They're unconstitutional. So illegal and unconstitutional is the same thing. So you're arguing from a weaker position than arguing with the Constitution. That's the point I'm making.
Well, I agree with that. But what it is that, of course, you got ignorance in the electorate that voted for them because they think that what they're saying is good, unknowingly that it's impossible to do because it would be illegally done.
Well, the other thing, you cannot violate rights of the people. You cannot vote away somebody else's rights. In fact, the lack of exercise of rights does not mean that they go away. Besides, rights, the natural rights we have are not all written down. What's written down is the prohibitions from government from touching certain rights, but they can't create a whole bunch of stuff. The Supreme Court can't do it. Now, the legislature could amend the Constitution and add. Well, let's take it this way: if the Congress put forth a constitutional amendment that said abortions are legal nationwide, and they wanted to put it in the Bill of Rights, or they wanted to, you know, make the 28th Amendment. How many amendments we got here? Let's take a look here. You know,
that would be totally, that would be ridiculous. That'd be like the ERA. Would never pass as a 28th Amendment to the Constitution.
Well, let's argue it. Okay, right. Could they do it, first of all? Could they pass a 20th Amendment and then abortion?
Could they make an amendment to the Constitution saying that abortion is legal?
Yeah.
Under all terms?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it would pass. I don't think it would get through the legislatures.
Right. I don't think it would either, but that's not what I'm arguing. Is it legally possible to do that?
If they was to make a constitutional amendment, that would be the law of the land.
Yeah. Well, the question is, before it would get there, I think there would be a challenge in the Supreme Court, because what it says is that they're giving jurisdiction over something that they have no jurisdiction over. There is no jurisdiction over health.
But the Supreme Court can't challenge amendments to the Constitution.
Sure it can. Before it's written, they can. Sure they can.
No.
Before it's been voted for. Before it's been ratified.
If the states voted in. Uh-huh. Wait a minute. If the states voted in, then
right.
suppose that the states vote in, we want to limit the Supreme Court to 5 justices.
Uh-huh.
So the 9 justice Supreme Court would vote it. No, that's ridiculous. They can't vote to control what the Constitution says.
Uh-huh.
It's the Constitution that permits them to exist.
Okay. So could this amendment be ratified? In other words, would it pass a Supreme Court challenge? See, the nice thing about constitutional amendments is they take several years to pass. You know, so if the Congress came up
if the state of Illinois vote yes, the Supreme Court can't tell the state of Illinois that you cannot vote yes to do that.
Hmm.
You cannot vote yes. If that was the case, they would have done it. Most recently in my lifetime that I know is equal rights. The courts didn't come out and say that you cannot put forth this equal rights amendment for women.
Mm-hmm.
The people
actually
turned
it was for
it
men
down.
Too. But now, well, see, here's the thing: did the Equal Rights Amendment violate the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment?
I don't know. I'd have to study.
So the reason I'm asking is because. The Equal Rights Amendment said that rights shall not be denied.
And that's what they were basing it off of.
Okay. Well, it said equal rights for women, but let me give you an example. Selective service. Only men have to register for the draft. So would not the Equal Rights Amendment have protected men from the unequal protection? Actually, the 14th Amendment does right now. I mean, you could challenge the draft on the fact that that women don't have to register, therefore that law is unequal. And you could challenge it on the constitutional, on the 14th Amendment alone. It should be thrown out. Unless everybody has to register for the draft,
you can't do it. Uh-huh. Under societal norms, society didn't put their women in the battlefield.
Yeah, but that's not we're talking a legal question, not a societal or cultural. Right.
Yeah, they would usher all the women and children away from the battle.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
So when you have something that wants to put women in places where traditionally throughout societies that they weren't, now you're starting to tread in the areas that's unknown.
Well, you're also assuming too that drafting women would put them in combat positions. Most of the military is non-combat. I think combat is what, 10-15% of the people in the military are actually engaged in combat with enemy forces. It's very small. So the idea
of
the draft,
generation of wars that you're in, you know, World War One was much different than World War Two and the Korean War.
Yep.
And surely now.
Yep. And wars are gradually moving towards fewer and fewer combatants and more administrative and support people. You know, you can fly. So is a World War One dogfighting pilot was in a fabric and wire airplane fighting another pilot in a fabric and wire and wooden airplane. Okay. That's very different than somebody. What's that?
And shooting pistols at each other.
Well, yeah, before they had machine guns, but that's not the point. But the point is they were engaged in combat. Now, would you call a soldier sitting at a computer screen in Indiana dropping a bomb on an Arab terrorist camp? You know, would you call them a combatant? Well, yeah, technically, but are they in danger in their computer screen in Indiana? You know, using a satellite to fly a drone, you know, in Yemen, you know, for example, are they in combat? No. Are they destroying and killing? Absolutely. But see, there's the difference.
Well,
so if you,
it
if
could
you,
be virtual combat. Yes. Just
yeah, but that's but the
name.
Point is, but the
combat.
Point is, the drafting of women today would be a very different discussion than the drafting of women 100 years ago.
Because it's not lethal like it was in days of old.
Okay. Well, it would be legal if the Selective Service
I
were
said
challenged.
Lethal.
Okay,
lethal.
Yeah. Okay, that makes sense. Yeah. But what I'm saying is you could challenge Selective Service now, 14th Amendment equal protection grounds. If we had, in fact, I don't, that actually makes the Equal Rights Amendment kind of moot because the 14th Amendment already says the laws have to apply equally. So you don't need it. But the Equal Rights Amendment was every bit as much for men as it was for women. People don't realize that. Family court,
well,
for
laws,
years,
yeah,
for
the
years,
laws,
family court sucked
equal,
for guys.
Yeah, you know, the equal in, protection protects mm-hmm. you from denial more so than mm-hmm. Protecting and giving you the right to have it, should I
uh-huh.
say.
Okay. Well, here's one, too.
And just like the court, should the courts be decision, should the courts have decided that interracial marriage was acceptable or should have been left to the states?
Well, since marriage is not a right, I'm not sure how to argue, though, and that's a really good question. In my mind, I'm thinking if anybody wants to marry, if a man wants to marry a woman, I don't care what race they are. That's irrelevant. That's up to them. That should not be an area that government has a right to say anything about. I think that would be an interesting thing if marriage, if the people who got, oh, see, you don't want to do that because people say the gay marriage is legal, and I think it culturally and historically, religiously, it's not. Because definition of marriage,
well,
you have a definition of marriage.
Well, you as a father have a say-so over who your daughter marries.
No, not when she's an adult, when she's 18, no. I mean, I mean, I'm sure parents, in other words, the parents can influence their kids, sure. But can they legally mandate they not marry somebody of a different race? No, I don't think so. So let's talk about, this is an interesting question. We got a few minutes left here. So in terms of marriage, interracial marriage, that was illegal in a lot of places, and it was overturned on what grounds? Equal protection or what?
It was overturned Lovins versus Virginia.
Okay, what was the...
Well, an interracial couple had to go to another state to get married.
That's interesting.
I think it should be left up to the states. If they're going to leave it up to the state in some instances, that seem...
Mm-hmm.
wildly debatable, then it should be left up to the states in all instances.
If states can set the race of which people can get married, is there anywhere else that states could then set the race using that as a precedent?
Well, they used to use sickle cell traits. If you were highly susceptible to sickle cell, I don't think that they would issue the license.
So that's different. Now, I know their marriage criteria, they used to, I don't know if they still do it. It's been a long time since I've been married. But they had, there were tests. There were health tests, blood tests. There were things that you had to do before you got married. So there were conditions. So this is why marriage isn't a right. So the thing that totally skews this argument about interracial marriage is that marriage is not a right. It's a contract. It's a contract between two people, their religion, if they have one, and the state. Because the state
you have a right to enter into the contract. So when they say that you can't marry, they are denying you the right to enter into a contract.
Do they though? I think because marriage is not a right.
Because they're the one that's going to recognize the contract. So if you're not following their guidelines, they won't recognize the contract. So what's the
absolutely.
Use?
Yep. Yep. And I agree with that. But the question is, can they not recognize the contract on the basis of race? I would say no.
Yeah.
And I can't tell you why. I can't quote the specific civil rights law, but I would say no.
Well, yes, they could, because if they can recognize the contract on basis of age, basis of height, basis mm-hmm. of sex,
mm-hmm.
you have many clerks that wouldn't issue a license based on same-sex marriage.
Mm-hmm. See, I don't think same-sex marriage is a marriage, though. So this is where this is interesting, okay? Because first of all, nobody has the right to be married.
They would allow
All right.
They would allow same sex to enter into that contract that they call marriage because mm-hmm. they were of same sex.
Yep. See, I agree with that because the definition of marriage has been around for thousands of years. A man and a woman sanctioned by God, licensed by the state. That's a marriage.
Yeah, now you're getting back to societal, norms. So
yes, I am.
If a society had made it normal for a man to have three wives, a maximum, then why come government cannot recognize societal norm when it's a society that makes up forms and governs the government?
Let's take Utah, where polygamy was legal. I've forgotten when it ended, but it was legal for a man to have multiple wives in up until 18 what? And that was their norm. That was their religion. That was accepted. That was law. I'm not sure exactly when
that
changed, how it changed, or why it changed.
Technically, you can have as many wives as you want to, just what would be recognized. Same thing with marrying a foreign spouse. If you marry a foreign spouse, if that country say you can have two, well, you can't bring two to the United States because they don't recognize that. I think that, in fact, too, is wrong.
See, that's an immigration issue. That's not a marriage issue. Well, it's sort of the same thing. So, in other words, yes, can the government limit people coming in because if some dude has six wives and he wants to bring them all in because they're married? No, you're bringing one. But I can't quote the statute of where that would be. But in terms of marriage, in terms of the contract, it's a contract. It's not a right. So because it's not a right, the states can set the contract. But here's the question that I don't know. We need to get a marriage expert in here. So at what point?
Well, you know,
does something
your state
become? Well, hang on. Let me
yeah,
your
state department.
Okay. Well, we'll get a state
if
department
you get married in another country, and it's legal. Then the State Department should recognize that marriage when that spouse, that American spouse, want to bring their foreign wife into the country.
Yes,
in some cases, at the time, they say it's a,
the
word they use? Bogus.
Oh,
they use the word
it's fraudulent
bogus.
Marriage. Yeah, yeah. I know what you're talking about. It's like people think it's
but they
married
got
for
a
green
license.
Card.
They got a license in the country where they come from.
Well, but let's get back to the other point, though, because I think this is something that we should talk about more. And I'd love to have a marriage expert. So custom is, marriage is not a right because it involves more than one person. So it can't be right. You cannot exercise marriage individually.
If society wanted it. You know, when settlers
you
went
marry
out
yourself.
To the West, there was no laws. Yeah,
right.
But there was no laws there. So
what
sprung up as laws was agreements between people. And that agreement and the stipulations of those agreements became laws.
Right.
Anyway, it's after 10.
We got 2 minutes. But the point is that I want to make on marriage, which is kind of interesting because I got to think this one through myself, is that because it's not a right, you can't enforce it on a rights basis. You cannot say that gay marriage is a right. You cannot say anything is a right because marriage isn't a right. And it can't be a right because it involves more than one person. Now, whether the state should be involved, that's a different question. Whether the state should license marriages, that's an interesting question. I'd have to think that one through. The biggest problem with marriage legally is divorce.
Two people come together under marriage, then it has to be they have a right to do that.
No, they don't.
If they do.
I disagree.
Well, you can't disagree because it's done all the time. When you go to court, the judge says
this is done all the time.
These two people come together.
Now, do I say people shouldn't pick who they want to be married to and choose that? That's fine. I'm not questioning that. I'm questioning whether marriage itself is a right. See, if it's a right, then anybody can do it for any reason at any time. So
well,
if marriage is right,
can
a 92-year-old can a 92-year-old marry a 12-year-old? If marriage is a right,
they can. Well, if you got certain guidelines, but let's say a 92-year-old marry a 16-year-old.
What the state?
Yes, they can.
Is, yeah, I guess if the age of consent is there, yeah.
And it goes beyond the state.
I'll tell you,
there's
going to be some objections.
It goes
to
the parent.
Yeah.
If the parent agreed to it, then also the court's got to get involved. But if the parent basically agreed to it, then the court's got to go along with it.
Mm. Yeah, it's interesting. It's an interesting question. Well, it's gray area. This is something that we can't resolve here right now, but it's interesting to talk about that, you know, and where does this get resolved? So back to the racial question. Can
it
a state
resolved
ban...
in a court.
Yeah. Well, that's what courts are for. Courts are the places where these things do get resolved. But it'd be interesting. You know,
they hear arguments between two parties and make an opinion, which is not law, and neither party has to agree with.
Yeah. Yeah, see, what I would argue that the states have an interest in keeping marriage as marriage. You know, man and woman, you know, sanctioned by God, licensed by the state. I think states have an interest in doing that.
It should be left to the church, really.
Well, that's an interesting question.
Now,
if you get the states out of
church.
It. Okay, so if you get the states out of it completely, then marriage would be by church only, in which case they could do what they wanted.
Well, yeah, they can, but somebody came along and said a justice of the peace have a right to marry. Well, that's ridiculous because you can apply online for the right to marry people, and it's just nothing other than filling out a paper.
Yeah, I'm one of those folks. I've got my United Life Church. I'm a pastor just like you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Deacon Greg.
Exactly.
I'm getting ready to get out of here.
I'll talk to you tomorrow. Sounds good. Thank
All right.
There we go. This has been a fascinating discussion. I didn't quite finish my article, so maybe I'll do that now. There's only one paragraph left on the government is dying. And so let me do that now. Because the nice thing about Blog Talk is I have a little bit of overtime. So I don't feel pressured on time as much because I can just keep talking. You know, you might get bored, but I like to finish my shows. And then I have Santa Rosa Volunteers piece to play for you also. So this is from the article, The U.S. Government is Dying. It's from the website What Really Happened, the history the government hopes you don't learn. I'm going to post both of these at the Action Radio group page, and that's our public page on Facebook, so you'll be able to pick them up then. But I've already cited where the article is, so it shouldn't be so hard to take a look at. I'm just back up one paragraph, so I'll put this all in context. It says, talking about debt, it says, this is the rock and hard place the U.S. government found itself in, so deep in debt it cannot even make the interest payments. Unable to sell products to generate revenues to pay that debt because manufacturing was taxed into relocating and a threatened collapse of the dollar that would force a default on the debt and ruin the standard of living Americans had worked so hard to achieve. From that perspective, a war of conquest to grab oil and to force the conquered nations to use the dollar to keep demand for the dollar high looks like the best option for a bankrupted government. Well, that's Iraq. That's the reason. That's the reasons the Bush oil family simply took us to war in Iraq. It was oil. It was always oil. It was always oil and money. That was why we went to war. Don't pretend it was anything else. There were no weapons of mass destruction. So Bush the elder and Bush the younger took us to war for the simple purpose of debt and oil and money and all the things I just mentioned in that paragraph to prop up the dollar. Surprise, surprise. All right. It was oil for money. It was a war for oil. All right. Anyway, it says, from that perspective, a war of conquest to grab oil and to force the conquered nations to use the dollar to keep demand for that dollar high looks like the best option for a bankrupt government. And my contention is that's exactly what they did. And then it says, but is it best for the people? And the last little bit here, it says, let's say for a moment, this is the article, let us say for a moment that we do go to war. Well, we did. So this is before Iraq, right? Let us say for a moment that we do go to war. Let us say we conquer several nations and force them to use the dollar. How does that change life here in the United States? We would still have a totalitarian government deeply in debt. To maintain its legitimacy, that government would still have to shackle you and your children to that debt. We still would not have a tax system conducive to creation of new manufacturing in this country. Even winning the war would not improve our lives. Well, of course, that's what happened, right? All that would be accomplished after all the blood was shed and the money was spent was that the very same people who got us into this mess would continue in power. That's what happened too. Article goes on. Let's try the other option. Let's say that the U.S. government, unable to initiate war or starting one, but unable to carry it out, watches as the world switches to the euro and the overvalued and frankly worthless debt-stricken dollar collapses. The Federal Reserve collapses. The people will not tolerate another bailout, especially of an institution which has been such a curse on the common man. As the banks and stock markets collapse, the U.S. government will get dragged down with the whole mess. But the people will still be here. Those 288 million Americans and their skills. That's how long ago this was written. 288 million Americans? I mean, we've got 330 now, so this is an older article. It says, those 288 million Americans and their skills will still be here. maybe that's, we're talking about working age Americans. And it says, and like our founding fathers, they will simply form a new government, one that starts out free of the huge debts run up by 100 years of reckless spending by the old government, a government made up not of lawyers, but of teachers, engineers, doctors, the people who know how to make a civilization work. Yes, there will be a time of confusion, as the case when the USSR collapsed, but as was demonstrated in the new Russia, following that confusion will be a time of opportunity for all the people with the strength and courage to take advantage of it. Bush wants a war to save the present government, and by supporting this his war with our money and the blood of our children, all we buy is more of that same government. Is it really worth the price? And so I agree. So I imagine this is Bush the Emperor. That's what they're talking about, the first war in Iraq. That's what it sounds like. But it's interesting. It's similar to what Josie says, that there's going to be new money, new government, new things like that. I don't think so. I think our civilization, our country, well, not our civilization, but our economy and our country could easily collapse under the current debt. It could easily do that. All right. But there's a way out of it. In fact, I'll tell you in just a second here. But that's, you know, but is it necessarily going to be something completely new, completely different? I don't think so. I don't think we're necessarily going to go for a new kind of money. I don't think that, as Jesse said, I don't think there's billions of new currency in Texas. I don't think we're going to get $100,000 because you can't give away money from nothing. It's worthless. And it always has been. But here's what I think the first answer is this amendment here. So I wrote this May 21st of this year. So just a few months ago. Constitutional amendment. Congress shall not have the power to borrow money. All right, very simple. Constitutional amendment. Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution shall be amended by striking Clause 2 to borrow money on the credit of the United States. Section 8, Clause 1 shall be amended by adding at the end, and Congress shall have no power to borrow money on the credit of the United States, nor to print money to cover expenses greater than revenues. This amendment will take effect immediately upon ratification. So there it is. So what this does is stops the government from borrowing, and it stops the printing of money beyond the actual money taken in. So I'm not sure why they would do that, except that I don't want them printing money on money they don't have. So they cannot cover expenses greater than revenue. So they cannot print extra money. So they can still print money. Government can print money, but they have to take money out of circulation to print money. So the money stays the same. The amount of money in circulation stays the same. They cannot print money in excess of revenues. They cannot print more money than they actually have. They cannot borrow money. They cannot create money out of nothing. That's what creates inflation, is the creation of money out of nothing. So that's the cure. That's the solution to this. Now, this other thing is a big revolution waiting for it to collapse. I don't want to wait till the country collapses. This makes no sense to me. What makes sense is to take what we have now to stop the Congress from borrowing money, you know, today if we can. Well, we can't today. But as soon as we stop the Congress from borrowing money, everything changes. And that's where deflation comes in. Deflation is what's going to save us. If you want to reverse the direction of money that's been going on for the last, you know, 100 years anyway, from the Fed and the government to the people, you have to go from inflation to deflation. And the only way that you go to deflation is to reduce the amount of money in circulation. You stop the printing of money. You hold the money at a consistent level. And as the economy grows and wealth grows and people, you know, and manufacturing grows and goods and services, mostly goods, you know, create more goods and services and people sell them back and forth and do what they do, you know, raw materials plus labor plus population, you know, plus work equals wealth. That's what wealth is, okay? And so you create something that through labor, you create something, you know, that's more valuable out of raw materials than it is as the raw materials. That's that difference between the cost of the raw materials and the cost of the finished goods is wealth. That's what it is. That's where you get wealth from, right? Now, services, you know, have a certain amount, and you need a certain amount of services. And I believe this service here, Action Radio, creates unparalleled wealth for everybody if we can get that constitutional amendment through. So the service we provide is the technology and the ability to write citizen legislation such that we can improve the lives of everybody, except the Fed, you know, and certain members of the government and the deep state. Well, I'm not trying to improve their lives. You know, because they were so greedy, because they stole our lives, because they put this nation in debt, because they created a company town out of the United States, in a permanent debt situation with permanent unemployment and permanent inflation to keep us controlled and subdued so we never get to live out our lives in our full potential. Because of that, they don't deserve anything. They deserve to be in jail because they were so selfish. They didn't work for the prosperity of everyone. They worked only for the prosperity of themselves. And that's the problem. At Action Radio, the bill to stop Congress from borrowing money works for the prosperity of everyone. Because if Congress stops borrowing money, then the debt gradually gets paid off, which means all that extra money is available for other things. you know, capital for businesses, for college, for anything that people want money for. You know, as soon as we stop printing money, the value of the dollar goes up, which means your savings go up, which means your investments go up, which means as the money becomes more valuable, you need less of it to buy things, which means the prices go down. That's what deflation is. Deflation is the economic magic bullet that we're looking for, but nobody talks about it because the government's convinced people that deflation is a bad thing. And the only way they could do that was to lie. And here's the big lie. The big lie on deflation is we can't have deflation because when people see the prices dropping, they'll stop buying things, waiting for the price to get lower. Okay, that's irrational. When the price of anything gets lower, people buy more of it. That's basic supply and demand. So the more deflation we have, the greater the value of the money, the more people are going to buy because the money is worth so much more, the greater wealth everybody has. So you can actually have fewer dollars and have far more money in terms of purchasing power. That's what we're talking about here. Deflation is necessary for our economic survival. And the way to get deflation is to stop the Congress from borrowing money. It's just that simple. That should be the number one issue of the 2024 campaign, taking away the power of Congress to borrow money. And I'm going to do everything I can to make sure that that is the issue. That is the issue. That is what we need to do. If we do that one thing, we can make prosperity for all the generations to follow. Just do that one thing. Pass that one constitutional amendment, taking away the – because that's what the Constitution is. It's a limit on federal power. It says what they can't do. Right? If they can't borrow money, they can't screw up all our lives. They can't create money. They can't have – there's no reason for a Fed. Because the money will take care of itself. They can't borrow it, so they can't print more of it. They can't regulate the supply of it. It'll be fixed because they can't borrow money. So you don't need a Fed. You want, all these people want to get rid of the Fed. The way you get rid of the Fed is pass a constitutional amendment saying that they can't borrow money. There is no Fed. There's not, what are they going to do? Meet and have lunch? Okay, fine. So they meet and have lunch. They can't pass any policy. But you might as well get rid of the Fed at that point too. Then drop taxes. Go for, as Josie said, consumption tax. So the only thing that is taxed is goods and services. That's it. And imports. Imports the way we used to tax things. I'm getting all kinds of texts. I'll get to them later. I've got a show to do. But that's it. That is the number one thing. If you want to save the country, the simplest thing is to go to writeyourlaws.com, click on legislation, click on all proposed laws, go to where it says a constitutional amendment to stop the Congress from borrowing money or take the power of Congress to borrow money and send that everywhere. That is the number one issue. It's too late for the midterms, but that I'm going to try and make that the number one issue of the 2024 campaign. Who is going to go to Congress to take away the power of Congress to borrow money? That's the ultimate sacrifice. That's the ultimate virtue. The ultimate virtue in anybody running for office is the person that wants to take away the power of Congress. That virtue was expressed by George Washington when he refused to serve a term beyond two. He said, that's it. I'm done. I've done what I set out to do. Someone else needs a chance. I'm not going to keep power forever. I'm not going to be a king. They offered him to be king. Great. But he had the wisdom to deny power. He said, look, I'm done. That's virtuous. You know, what is it that Franklin said, that this government depends on a virtuous people? A virtuous people need to go to Congress knowing that they're going to take away the power of Congress to borrow money. Those are the virtuous people. Those are the people we need to elect. That is the greatest virtue, the virtue of sacrificing your power, which you shouldn't have anyway, but the ability to sacrifice power for the good of the country. That is a virtuous person. Those are the only people that should be elected to Congress, are those who want to pass an amendment, take away the power of Congress to borrow money, knowing that Congress is addicted, pathologically addicted, to destroying our economy by borrowing money. That single thing would change everything. Unparalleled prosperity. You think the Roaring Twenties were big in the 1900s? We could have a Roaring Twenties 1,000 times bigger than the 20s. In the 1920s, simply by stopping Congress from borrowing money. The effects would be immediate. Dollar value would rise. Prices would drop. Government would stop spending. They'd stop printing. Inflation would be gone. There would be no inflation. If anybody wants to challenge me on this, feel free. I know I'm right. 215-383-3822. Do it another day because I'm done for today. I'm going to play, I'll get you another one pretty soon here. The Santa Rosa Volunteers on Anti-Federalist number 13. A little bit long, but that's okay. We're in Blog Talk Radio overtime at this point. Back a little bit with the closing. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, insights into our founding documents, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers here in Santa Rosa County, Florida. Santa Rosa Volunteers is available at their website, srv1776.com. That's SRV
1776.com. Anti-Federalist Paper number 13 was written by our old anonymous friend under the name A. Farmer. The paper is titled The Expense of the New Government, referring to the Constitution being considered for ratification on this date, October 17, 1787. In the first paragraph, A. Farmer complains about overpaid government bureaucrats, even from the Articles of Confederation. Regarding that, he says, "The truth is, when you carry a man's salary beyond what decency requires, he immediately becomes a man of consequence and does little or no business at all." That pretty much explains our multi-trillion dollar bureaucrat welfare establishment workforce. They knew it even before our Constitution was ratified. The second paragraph starts with a call to action. It implores all to make sure that if the Constitution is ratified by the states, it must include a Bill of Rights. Sadly, it did not until many years later. But A. Farmer and the Anti-Federalists knew that without one, the Constitution was for the government and not for the people. He says, "Rouse up, my friends, a matter of infinite importance is before you on the carpet, soon to be decided in your convention. The new Constitution. Seize the happy moment. Secure to yourselves and your posterity the jewel liberty, which has cost you so much blood and treasure by a well-regulated Bill of Rights from the encroachments of men in power. For if Congress will do these things in the dry tree when their power is small, what won't they do when they have all the resources of the United States at their command?" Well, we all know what they would do. They would create a coup to steal the government and rule by the tyranny of mandates, none of which are legal, and all of which constitute the very insurrection they blame on the true government and those who support it. A. Farmer continues by describing the proper place of bureaucrats in relationship to the people in terms of what this paper is all about, that being the expense of government, in this case, people who work in it. He says, "They are the servants of the public. You have an undoubted right to set their wages, or at least to say, thus far, you and those under you may go and no further. This would, in the end, ease Congress of a great deal of trouble, as it would put a stop to the impertinence of individuals in asking large salaries." You can usually tell the evil or folly of a government program or law by how quickly the supporters want it passed, implemented, or in the case of the Constitution, ratified. The Federalists are always in such a hurry, spending much time on the urgency of ratifying the Constitution before the states all break into factions or various nations of Europe declare war on us. Both were fiction, but they served a purpose, much as the propagandized creation of the fear of COVID, which is as always to increase government power and control. A. Farmer says of this artificial urgency, "My friends and countrymen, let us pause for a moment and consider. We are not driven to such great straits as to be obliged to swallow down every potion offered us by wholesale or else die immediately by our disease. We can form a constitution at our leisure and guard and secure it on all sides. We are paying off our state debt and the interest on the domestic as fast as Congress call upon us for it. As to the foreign debt, they have the promise of more interest from us than they can get anywhere else, and we shall be able to pay them both interest and principal shortly. But it is said they win declare war against us if we don't pay them immediately. Common sense will teach them better. We live at too great a distance and are too hardy and robust a people for them to make money out of us in that way." A. Farmer then describes various economic classes, from merchants to soldiers to government folks who want public debt and paper money abolished. But whatever the economic consequences or benefits, this still remains the fundamental problem that the Constitution by itself fails to guard our liberty by prohibiting government from enacting certain laws, regulations, policies, or practices. A. Farmer says, "But in neither of these cases do I wish to see it adopted without being guarded on all sides with a Magna Carta or a Bill of Rights as a bulwark to our liberties." So the economic consequences of funding the government, its officers, the national debt, and interest are subordinate to the essential component of a bulwark to our liberties. And of that, the Federalists have not spoken to this point. A. Farmer continues. He says, regarding the Constitution, "But we need not be in a hurry about it. Consider, my friends, you are the persons who must live and die by this Constitution. A merchant or mechanic may dispose of his goods or pack them up in trunks and remove it to another clime in the course of a few months. But you cannot shoulder your lands or dispose of them when you please. It therefore behooves you to rouse up and turn your most serious and critical attention to this Constitution." So ends part one. In part two, A. Farmer issues a warning to his fellow citizens, which is also a precursor to the tyranny of the deep state and their stolen government has imposed on this country by a coup d'etat. A. Farmer says, "A large representation has ever been esteemed by the best Whigs in Great Britain the best barrier against bribery and corruption, and yet we find a British king having the disposition of all places, civil and military, and an immense revenue squeezed out of the very mouths of his wretched subjects, is able to corrupt the Parliament, devote him any supplies he demands, to support armies, to defend the prerogatives of his crown, and carry fire and sword by his fleets and armies, to desolate whole provinces in the eastern world, to aggrandize himself and satisfy the avarice of his tyrannical subjects. Replace King with Brandon, and our plight will be accurately reflected in the history books." The next paragraph is so good, I just have to read it. A. Farmer says, "No wonder our American ambassador, John Adams, struck with the brilliancy of the British court, where everything around St. James wears the appearance of wealth, ease, and plenty, should imagine a three-branch legislature only can produce these effects and make the subjects happy, should write a book in favor of such a government and send it over for the illumination of this Western world. If this is the sole fruit of his embassy, America will not canonize him for a saint on account of his services, when they have experienced the consequences of such a kind of government as he has planned out. In order to have formed the right judgment, he should have looked into the ditches which serve for graves for many of the human race, under hedges which serve as dreary habitations for the living, into the cottages of the poor and miserable, and critically examine with how much parsimony the mechanics, the day laborers, cottagers and villagers live in order to support their high pampered lords, before he had wrote a book to persuade his country to pursue the same road to greatness, splendor, and glory, and have reflected in his own mind whether he could wish to see that country which gave him birth reduced to the same situation." And here we are today. In conclusion, A. Farmer submits the question of whether it makes sense to rush into ratifying this Constitution before all the details have been spelled out. I agree, which is why Action Radio is sponsoring a constitutional amendment to take away the power of Congress to borrow money. Just one of many proposed overhauls planned to make the Constitution live up to its promise of limited government and no public debt. A. Farmer says, "Now I submit it to the good sense of the people of these states, whether it is prudent we should make so liberal and extensive a grant of power and property to any body of men in these United States before they have ever informed the public the amount of the public debt, or what the annual expenses of the federal government is or will be. The source for the Federalist and Anti-Federalist Papers is federalistpapers.org. The Articles of Confederation are from usconstitution.net. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers. Their website is srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Please share this report to anyone who needs it. What a great day, huh? I certainly enjoyed this. We had some fascinating conversations. And this is one of those times when we just had the opportunity to let people go and discuss things in great detail. We had 2 free hours. So that may not happen again for a while. Usually I like to have a guest for one of those hours. But that's just how it worked out. And hopefully we'll get Brianna back at some point later this week, and we can get our government inquiry report and all her questions as well. So back tomorrow. Tomorrow we've got Bill Fecky starting us off and with the Fecky report. And then we have Wendy Arthur with the Oh My God report, Christianity with a Kick. We've got our Wild Women of Wellness, and then we've got Captain Tom Stewart with a couple of guests of his own too. So tomorrow's a big day. Thursday, World's Greatest Doctors panel, and then Friday we have our gun and financial and other reports, and hopefully a guest as well. So it's a busy week here on Action Radio. So many things to do, but the most important thing, if you want to help out and if you want to be part of the future instead of complaining about the present, you want to go to writeyourlaws.com, WRITEYOURLAWS, writeyourlaws.com. You want to click on legislation, click on all proposed laws, and pick the laws that you want to advocate. That's where you're going to find them. The ones in citizen bill ideas are still being worked on. And if you want to propose a law, that's right under legislation where it says propose a new law. And that's it. And I'll see you tomorrow Wednesday, 7 a.m. Central Time. Have a wonderful day. And if you want change, make change. And I'll talk to you tomorrow.